Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Raven Real Spiel Radio. This is your girl, Raven the Serious Poet, coming to bring to y'all another night of 31 Days of Horror. To those of you who have made it up to this point, thank you, and I appreciate the love and support. Also, I want to let y'all know that y'all are amazing. If you wasn't told today, you are love and you are light. All negativity that is surrounding you, we dismiss it. And the only thing that we will acknowledge is the power and the positivity that is our energy. So before we get started with the show, I want y'all to call in. The number is 914-205-5813. That's 914-205-5813. We are going to get into this story, and if you're listening to the playback, we appreciate your love and support as well. Let's get it.
I used to work as a cashier at a BP that was right off the interstate. It doubled as a truck stop and was open 24 hours. I had worked there for about a year, so I was fairly comfortable with the job, and I was used to working night shifts alone, despite being a smaller person. So I was working one night, and everything was going as usual. It was about 1 a.m., and I saw a pickup truck pull in. Three passengers got out and entered the store. The two men were wearing camouflage outfits, and the woman was wearing jeans and a sweater. The men talked to the woman outside of the door before entering, and then they all went straight to me at the counter and asked for some cigarettes. As the one man was paying, the other one went to the other side of the store looking at drinks. I looked at the woman and realized that she had a look of panic on her face. I immediately felt in my gut that something bad was going on. We made eye contact, and she mouthed the words, "Help me." Then, the man grabbed his cigarettes with one hand and the woman's arm with the other and yelled at his buddy that they were ready to go. I was only 19 and wasn't really sure what to do, so I waited until they walked out the door and slid my hand under the counter and hit the panic button. About 5 to 10 minutes later, the cops got there and I told them what happened. They looked at the surveillance videos and told me that they were investigating a kidnapping with a description of that same vehicle. I told them which direction they went on the interstate, and the rest of the officers left after them while I gave my statement to the one who stayed behind. I never did find out if they caught them or not. In college, I would go home every other weekend to work at the job I had since high school. I would drive directly from campus after my last class on Friday to my job. After my shift was done, I'd go back to my parents' house, which was out in the middle of nowhere. My parents weren't yet home when I got back from work. They often spent their Friday and Saturday evenings drinking, like they were the ones in college. So the house was dark, and since it was mid-fall, so was the yard, except for that one yard light. I pulled into my normal parking spot, got out of the car, and then turned to open the back door of my car and get my backpack out of the back seat. That's when I noticed that the bathroom light was on. Was that light on when I pulled up? It must have been, right? As I was contemplating the light and reaching for my backpack, there was suddenly a very angry-looking old woman standing in the window staring at me. She was very pissed off at me, and I knew it. We stood there staring at each other for a good 10 seconds when my parents pulled into the driveway and distracted me from my stare down. By the time I turned back, the light was still on, but the woman was gone. About 2 years ago, I was driving home from a family reunion pretty late at night, and the drive was about 2 hours. I didn't stay the night because I had to be back for work the following day. Most of the drive was on roads with dense bushes and trees on either side, the real creepy ones you see a lot in movies. I had been driving about 45 minutes, and I was starting to get really tired. I knew I wasn't going to last, but I didn't come across any place that I felt I could park and safely sleep. After it became clear to me that I wasn't going to find a place to pull over, and my tiredness wasn't going away, I did something very questionable. I pulled over to the side of the road onto the grass, behind some bushes, to try and hide my car from anybody else who was going to come past. I made a mental note that the time was 11:22, and then I fell asleep. Some time later, I was awoken by a scratching sound. I looked at the clock. 11:50. The sound stopped after a few seconds, and because I was still extremely tired, I didn't bother looking around and simply went back to sleep. I was later awoken by the same sound, and it was now 12:40. This time, it really freaked me out, because the sound didn't stop. The thought ran across my mind that it was just an animal inspecting my car. But why would it return almost an hour after it had left the previous time? I looked in my rearview mirror and just managed to catch a glimpse of something running away into the forest. I got the hell out of there. There was a bend no more than 100 yards up the road, and as I came around it, there was a car parked off to the side of the road with the driver's side door open. I slowed down just to look to see if anyone was in there. There wasn't. Then, I looked in my rearview mirror. I didn't see anything. And then all of a sudden, this guy comes sprinting around the corner. He starts screaming at me, shouting stuff like, "Hey! Hey you! Get out of the car, now!" I sped off. I never saw the guy again. I once had to work at a very late shift at the funeral home to prepare a body for a viewing the following morning. I think I finally finished my work around midnight. It was winter, and I ended up getting snowed in at the funeral home that night. I had to stay the night until the plows came early in the morning to plow me out. Let me tell you, it is creepy as hell sleeping in a funeral home knowing that there are 20 dead people in the basement, especially when you hear constant noises. I'm in college, and I live on a campus in a dorm room. This dorm is very old and community style. I've been living here for 2 months with my roommate, and everything has been fine. In the last week, we've had all of our lights in our room, just our room, go out. We've been trying to put maintenance requests in for the past week, but the website won't allow us to do it for some reason. Last night, I heard my roommate yelling from the hallway that her key wasn't working in the lock and that she needed in now. So I stumbled out of bed and was reaching for the lock on the door when I looked over and saw her asleep in her bed. I backed away from the door to go back to sleep, thinking that it had been a dream. I took a last look at my sleeping roommate and went to turn around to climb into my bed when I saw the shadow under the door. The door is a good inch or two off the ground, so I bent down to see if there was someone standing at our door, or the one across the hall. When I was eye level with the crack, I saw a pair of boots facing the door. Then, the person turned away, and I heard the stairwell door open. I couldn't even turn on the lights, because the bulbs were out, so I crawled into bed with my lamp and sat there for an hour, because I was freaking out. To get onto the girls' floor, you have to have the student card of someone that lives here. They lock the building up at midnight every night to make sure that only students and guests are inside. We've had problems with homeless people sleeping in the basements of some of our buildings. I was freaking out because the boots at the door were men's boots. I could have swore I heard my roommate's voice. I took care of my mentally handicapped cousin a few years back. She could get around well enough, but due to severe arthritis in her knees and ankles, she had to be watched, helped into the bath, shit like that. I would go into her room in the morning, help her to her walker so she could go to the bathroom, and I would make her breakfast. One morning, I heard the water running in the bathroom when I went in to check on her. I had to pass her room on the way to the bathroom. When I did, I saw that she was in her rocking chair in the corner, her blanket over her head, and she was rocking back and forth. "Don't leave the water on. You're going to flood the place." I went into the bathroom to shut the faucet off, and my cousin was there, washing her face. I immediately ran back to the room, but it was just her blanket crumpled up on the rocking chair. My cousin wanted to know why I undid her bed. I didn't stay too long after that. When I was younger, I used to live by the woods and could see a cemetery from my back porch. One Easter, I remember waking up and seeing the Easter Bunny. I didn't tell anyone, but there was an extra Easter egg in my house that my parents didn't hide. Years later, when I was in high school, I asked my parents if they ever dressed up like the Easter Bunny, and came into our room. They said they would never go through so much trouble. Then, my younger sister, who I shared a bunk bed with when this happened, said she remembers when the Easter Bunny came into our room. I was terrified that we both remembered seeing a person dressed as a bunny in our room. To make it even weirder, I told the friends I sat with at lunch what happened. One of the girls was my neighbor across the street. She told me one Easter a long time ago, she looked out her window during the night and saw the Easter Bunny standing in her driveway. It gave me chills. To this day, I am terrified of people who wear that costume. I had awesome parents who let me sleep in the living room because my sister was a light sleeper and I could stay up until dawn. But of course, I always ended up sleeping on the couch because Nick at night made me tired. One night, I wake up to a strange feeling, like an instinct. I just bolted into a sitting position and stared out the front window. We lived in rural Georgia, so you can imagine the magnitude of trees. In perfect light cast from the moon, I see a silhouette of someone in the tree in front of my house. The family dog dashes to the window and is snarling into the glass. Terrified, I run into my parents' room and try to explain to my parents that there is a strange person outside. My dad grabs something defensive. I tremble in my mom's arms until my dad comes back in and says that he saw no one and he wants me to go to bed. I decide to sleep in my regular bedroom. I tell my sister what happened. Dad is making regular rounds in the house with a cup of coffee. Everything is silent and calm, and I finally think to myself, I can sleep. Nope. I notice the man outside my window. He gives me a hush signal and runs away. He just turns around to run a straight line away. Every bit of this story is true. I grew up playing pool, and going out of town for the weekend to play a tournament was common. My friends and I were in our early 20s and on a tight budget, so we decided to carpool and share a hotel room for the next tournament. We even found a fourth guy, Bert, to ride along with us. I had only met Bert once prior. He was a huge redneck with a wandering eye. Intimidating and drunk might be the best words to describe him. On the 3-hour ride to the tournament, Bert was already drunk and talking crazy shit about his wife. Apparently, they were going through a divorce, and he was not happy about it. He eventually starts describing this fight, where he has her on the floor with his foot on her neck, and then cutting her throat. Everyone in the vehicle was like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? We all make it back home from the tournament, and the following Monday, I get a call. It's the cops. Holy shit. They asked me the strangest questions about Bert. Did he have mud on his shoes? Did he mention his wife? What was his demeanor like on the trip? Weeks later, I would find out what really happened. Bert murdered his wife that Thursday night. The next afternoon, he gets in my car for a road trip. That fight that he described in the car wasn't just some fight. He was describing how he murdered her. I went on a road trip and shared a hotel room with this guy. I had a very frightening night last year. Out of the blue, I live by myself, and late in the night, I got a phone call. My cell phone's volume was down very low, and I couldn't hear it ring while I slept. I woke up for no particular reason about an hour after the call. I grabbed my phone and looked at the screen, and it was a private number. I went back to sleep and thought nothing of it. I woke up again a couple hours later, and I looked on my phone to see that the same number had called 15 more times. That was enough to wake me up completely, and I saw that I had 3 new voicemails from that number. I listened to the first one that was left. A man whispered into the phone, "I just crawled through the window in your dining room." That obviously made my hair stand on end, and I felt like I was going to pass out. I sat in bed, terrified, for a few minutes, thinking of what I should do next. I listened to the second voicemail. The man then said into the phone, "Your bedroom door is locked." After hearing that, I immediately called 911. I told them somebody was in my house. They proceeded with questions, and I didn't hear a single one. I was so scared. I stayed on the phone with them until 2 officers showed up at my house, and they searched the place. Eventually, I felt comfortable enough to let them leave, and when they did, I listened to the third voicemail. The man whispered into the phone, "I am hiding in your house." After hearing that, I got in my car and drove to my sister's house and slept there that night. I didn't return home until the next day with more police officers, my sister, and her husband. The whole place was searched inside and out, and we all found nothing. Not a single sign of forced entry. Nothing. Not a single phone call after that night. And I need to tell myself, it was just some kid trying to scare me. When I was in high school, you could say I had some mental issues. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I was depressed all the time and thought about killing myself regularly. My parents had me go off to a psychiatric institution for boys. I made friends with boys who were like me. They had similar problems and understood where I was coming from. This one day, a new boy arrived on our block. We all knew very quickly that he was a very special case. On his first day, he attacked another boy with a plastic spoon he had broken. He was put into private isolation, where he received counseling every day, as well as massages to try to keep him calm. At some point, he was free to be around the rest of the boys again, and on the day he was first allowed to join us, he came up behind me when I was drawing and bit the back of my neck. I don't mean he gave me a nibble either. I was rushed to the nurse's station and had to get 23 stitches. I was released from the institution before this boy was, and every day I was there with him, I was terrified. He would look at me often with a hatred in his eyes. All he wanted to do was hurt me and every other boy there. I have no idea what became of him. My father remarried when I was 7 years old. My new stepmother had 3 kids. The youngest, a boy, was just a baby. Her oldest was also a boy, and he was a very nice kid. He was 2 years older than me. Her middle child was my age, and she was a girl. This girl, we'll call her Amy, was extremely troubled. She was a very, very mean child. When we first moved in with them, I would wake up in the middle of the night, and Amy would sometimes be there, in the doorway to my room, watching me. I'm not exaggerating, she actually did this, and my dad flipped out when I told him. Amy stopped doing it after she got in trouble, but after a few weeks, one night, I woke up to unbelievable pain. Amy had pushed a thumbtack into my forehead. I screamed and cried, and my dad and Amy's mom came running into the room. Amy got in trouble, of course, but not like she should have. My parents were in denial and figured she was just mad at me, but I told them there was something wrong with her and that nothing had happened and she had no reason to be mad at me and to do something like this. I could tell that my dad knew there was something more that was wrong. I tried telling my dad I thought she should go to a hospital, but at my age, I didn't really know what they were called, just a hospital for people with problems. We lived down a dirt road, and during the weekends, sometimes I was forced to play with Amy. I constantly told her to stop staring at me and to not come near me. I was living in hell. This little girl was crazy. All she talked about was becoming a doctor so she could do surgery, but maybe not good surgery, as she put it. She said it would be fun to cut people's bodies open and fill their cavities and arteries with broken glass and nails. To say I was scared of her would be an understatement. One day, I was playing in my room when she told me to come with her. She wanted to show me something. I followed her down to the creek by our house, and when I got there, I almost fainted. She had brutally killed a bunch of ducks. I ran home and cried. She told me that if I told anybody, she would stick thumbtacks into my head again. My dad and her mom eventually got divorced a couple years later, and it's been many years now. About 5 years ago, I saw on her mom's social media account that she was committed to a mental institution. Surprise, surprise. I was asked to house sit a few years back for my good friend Paul. He and his family were going to Disney World on vacation for 5 days, and he wanted me to stay there and feed their pets, and just make sure everything was cool while they were gone. I was unemployed, and he offered me $200. I really needed the money, so I agreed to do it. The first couple of days were fine, fun, and relaxing, as a matter of fact. They had a hot tub that I took advantage of, and their two dogs were really awesome. On my third night there, however, things started to get weird. I made a sandwich for dinner and left everything on the counter, or so I thought. About an hour later, I returned to the kitchen counter to grab a beer and put everything away, and I noticed the bread was already put up, and the mustard and mayonnaise were also already back in the fridge. I wasn't positive that I didn't put everything away, but I was pretty sure. I brushed it off and fell asleep watching TV. The next day I woke up and the TV was off. Not just the TV though, all the lights in the room, the TV and the speakers too. I was officially weirded out by this point and thought they might have had a ghost or something. Again, I brushed it off. The rest of the day, everything was cool. Nothing weird happened. Then, the next day, I went to the store, and when I came back, I decided to get back in the hot tub. A while later, I got out and realized my towel that I had left hanging on the hook on the deck was gone. I went inside, dripping all over the place, and found my towel in the master bathroom, flung over the side of the shower. I knew for sure I had not put the towel there, and I called Paul to ask him if he was used to weird shit like this happening in his house, and if they might have had a ghost. He told me no, that they hadn't experienced anything weird. He then told me to ask John. I asked who John was, and his answer confused me. He said it was his brother-in-law. I told him his brother-in-law has not come by since I'd been there. His response gave me goosebumps. He said John lives there with us. I was so freaked out that I tuned out everything else he said to me and finally said back to him, "I have not seen him one time. Why would you ask me to house sit if he was here too?" He then said John was disabled and he couldn't drive a car or get around the house easily. After hearing that, I told him again I haven't seen him once and that I was so freaked out I was gonna leave. He tried to keep talking to me, but I hung up and ran to start gathering my clothes and whatnot. I was on edge, and a few minutes later I had all my things and bolted out of that house. Paul called me 2 days later. and told me John said he never saw me either. A few years ago, I was home alone at night. I was watching TV in the living room when I heard the doorbell ring. Whenever I hear the doorbell ring, especially when I'm home alone, I am very cautious to answer it. I walked up to the peephole without turning on the porch light, so they don't know if anyone is actually home or not. And I looked through it. It was really dark, but I can see a small figure, more like a black blob. I don't know its definite shape, and had to be around 3 to 4 feet, doing like a dancing motion, dipping down and oscillating its arms outward. Think of a person moving their arms like wings gracefully. It was dark outside, but this figure was darker, so I could see this going on. After a few seconds, I stopped looking through the peephole because it was too freaky to look at. I regained some courage and looked back through it, and whatever it was gone. To this day, I still don't know what that was, and I get freaked out just thinking about it. I'll give you some backstory before I begin. I am 21 years old now, but when this happened, I was only 14. I was home alone. I don't remember why, but I do remember I was on the phone with my friend when downstairs I heard a noise. Confused, I got up from my bed and creaked my bedroom door open. I told my friend to hold on, and I yelled down the stairs, "Guys?" I was assuming I would hear them respond, but I didn't. I didn't hear a thing. I did hear my dog growling downstairs, and thought that's what I must have heard the first time, although it always made me scared when I would hear her growl. It put me on edge. I felt comfort, though, because my friend was on the phone with me. I went downstairs and turned the corner into the kitchen. As I turned the corner, I saw the door to our basement close. It scared the shit out of me, and I froze where I was standing. My dog was growling outside, looking in at me, and started freaking out when she saw me, and started jumping on the glass door. This didn't help, and scared me even more. I ran over and let her inside, and she immediately ran to the basement door and started growling at it. That was all I needed to see, and was freaking out to my friend on the phone. I told her I was sure somebody was down there and I was gonna leave. I felt much better when I went outside onto the front lawn and saw my neighbor outside getting his mail. I went over to him, and it was weird because I have never spoke to him until then, and I told him I was sure somebody was in my house. He was very understanding, and he told me to come with him while he grabbed his phone and called my parents. I didn't know he had their number, but I was so glad he did. My mom believed me right away, but my dad took some convincing. I felt bad for ruining their night, but somebody was in our house. I was sure. I sat with my neighbor awkwardly on his front porch, staring at my house. While we waited, I saw the master bedroom light turn on. My neighbor and I flipped out, and he couldn't believe it. When my parents got home, my mom came over to us, and my dad and my neighbor slowly went inside the house. I think they were scared as hell, but neither one said so. They ended up not catching the person, and I was happy, because I was afraid of my dad getting hurt. My dad did say that he thinks he just missed whoever it was. The back door was unlocked the whole time. It was so creepy. I never felt comfortable in that house after that, even when my parents were home. And still, I get scared sometimes when I think too much about it. Hey, I'm new to the forum, but I have a really creepy story to share. Around 10 years ago or so, I was working as a pizza delivery driver. I had just turned 18, and it seemed like a good first job for me. So that you can understand the story and my experience better, just know that I am a female, and I'm on the petite side. So I hadn't been working at this pizza place very long before this happened. It was a Saturday night, around 11 o'clock. Why it is okay to have a petite young girl deliver pizzas at this time of night, I have no idea, but I was. I had one delivery to make at an apartment complex a few miles up our main street. I figured this one would be quick, and I'd probably get a decent tip because I always seem to when delivering to this complex. I went to the apartment number listed on the receipt and knocked. A man answered the door. This man was tall, good-looking, with long brown hair that was kept and combed to the side. If I remember correctly, he was wearing blue jeans and a turtleneck long-sleeve shirt. When he answered, he seemed very happy to see me. He said hello and told me to hang on for a second and kind of closed the door in my face. I assumed he was getting the money when he opened it back up, and I saw another man now standing near a bedroom door close by. The man had a big smile and was honestly pretty attractive. He asked me to come inside and set the pizza on the table. I looked at his hands and he wasn't holding any money. I thought this seemed weird and I didn't trust the situation. I told him I'd just wait here for the payment and he insisted that I come inside to put the pizza on the table. I told him I was sorry but I couldn't do that and he said something like, "It's fine, I'll get your money. Just come in and put it down." I told him I didn't feel comfortable entering people's houses and that it was against our policy anyway. He then stopped smiling and said, "Just come in." I felt scared now and told him I wasn't going in one last time. He then slammed the door in my face and it scared me even more. I hurried back to my car and drove back to the store. The guy obviously didn't want the pizza. It was very frightening. I wish I could say I quit after that, but I didn't. And I even delivered pizza to that same complex a few more times before I started another job. Thank God I never saw that man or the other guy that was there again. Do you ever have the feeling when you're walking somewhere at night that the person behind you is following you? That happened to me, and not very long ago either. I was walking home from my friend Nicole's house. She only lived like 7 blocks down from my street, but we live in the downtown area of a huge city. I should have known better, but I do now. I was walking, and I could just feel that somebody was behind me at some point. I'm not sure how. Instinct, I guess. I turned around kinda to see who it was. And it was exactly what you don't want to see. A tall man, wearing dark clothes, with his hands in his hoodie pockets. I started picking up my pace because of the natural nervousness it brought me. I thought for sure he wasn't actually following me, but I started to hear his steps when I couldn't before. I turned again and saw that he was walking really fast behind me now, about 30 feet away. I became scared and paranoid and thought, should I actually start running? And after I heard his steps become much faster, I realized he had started running. So I did too. I turned around while running to see him full on sprinting at me. This damn near gave me heart failure. I ran faster and faster. He wasn't gaining speed on me, and I saw the sign of a liquor store fairly close. I heard his steps start to fade as I got closer to it, and I ran inside and up to the counter, where the very concerned man that was working there was looking at me. I told him I was sorry, but I thought somebody was following me. I looked out the door, and the man never passed by. I called my boyfriend and told him what just happened to me, and he was pissed. He said he would come get me, and I stood there telling the man at the counter about it too. My boyfriend came in and he said nobody was outside the store. That proved to me that the guy was actually chasing me. I was remodeling a house about a year back, down in Memphis. This couple that had hired me on had money, and they were expecting a baby when I first met them. The wife was pretty far along, and it turned out she went into labor only about a week into my work there. I showed up for work the morning after they had gone to the hospital, and the husband left me the key and told me to help myself to anything in their refrigerator, and they probably wouldn't be home for a couple days. So I was putting up drywall in their family room, listening to music, I was trying to keep busy when suddenly I heard something. It sounded like somebody hit a drum. I set the stuff I was holding down and turned down my radio. I didn't hear anything anymore, so I walked over to the foyer and peered down the hallway that led to the master bedroom. I'm not shy, so I hollered out, "Hello?" I got nothing back. Then I heard a door close down the hall. I was looking down the hall when I heard it, and to me it sounded like the door to the master bathroom had opened up. I said hello. Again, I heard nothing. I went back to work, but only a few minutes later I was holding a full sheet of drywall, about to drill it up, when out of the corner of my eye I saw someone. I turned, but they had vanished. I heard them run down the hall. I pretty much dropped what I was holding and said hello again. I was breathing heavy now because I saw a person in the corner of my eye. I was certain. I walked over to the hallway again and looked down. I saw no one and heard nothing. I looked at my watch and it was 6:19. I told myself I was good for the day and walked back over to where I was working. I plugged in my drill charger and slid a battery into it, and I grabbed my keys on the counter and walked outside. I came back to their house the next morning and continued working. Before I did, though, I walked down the hallway and checked the rooms. Nobody was there but me. Later on, I asked the husband when they got home who that might have been, and he said he had no idea, that nobody lived there but them. I'm certain I saw somebody in that house. So my wife and I were celebrating 5 years of marriage. We were staying in this nice hotel in Santa Cruz called the Dream Inn. It was September, so it wasn't too hot outside, and not cold either. It was perfect. One night we got back to our hotel from dinner. My wife got in the shower, and I was sitting on the balcony overlooking the ocean. I was drinking a beer and just enjoying the scenery. It was really cool. I could see the ocean from there, the wharf, and the boardwalk. As I was sitting there, a man walked over, and from underneath me he said, "Hey, your wife is gorgeous, sir. You better keep your eye on her." I took offense to this asshole approaching me and saying this, so I just said nothing back. He walked off, and I forgot about it. The next day we were walking along the wharf and saw a nice restaurant we wanted to eat lunch at. We went inside and sat down. I noticed soon after that one of the waiters was being creepy and kept making a point to look over to us as he walked by. My heart skipped a beat when I realized that the waiter was the same guy that was under my balcony the night before. I stared him down and he just smiled at me. It really angered me and, quite frankly, scared me. I told my wife about it and she agreed that we should eat somewhere else. We were only there for one more day, and I didn't see that asshole again. But man, that was creepy. That guy must have been on a lunch break or something and followed us. I have no idea. Hey there. I have to share this with you guys. I think this story would qualify to be on here. I work for a pest management company. I want to remain anonymous and don't want to name my company, but it's a pretty big one in the U.S. I'm a termite guy, which means I do the really tough work. I have to crawl under houses and spray termite killer on the wooden beams that hold up the house, as well as drill holes in concrete and dig ditches along the perimeter of houses. Not too many scary things can happen, I guess, while doing this job. It's really tough work, but this one day, like 6 months back, I had the surprise of a lifetime. I was working at this really old, run-down place up in the hills in my state, and the woman who lived at the house was really nice. She was an older broad and just wanted her house saved before the termites literally ate the whole thing. So everything was going as it would normally, and I was going under the house in the crawl space to spray. As I was crawling, though, I smelled something really foul. I thought to myself, this smells like nothing I've ever smelled. But it was really strong. Not strong enough to stop me, though, or make me puke or anything. But man, I tell you, it was bad. I was crawling, spraying, and trying not to breathe too much because of the smell. As I crawled, I ran into a body. It was almost completely rotted, but there was still flesh I could see. It felt surreal, honestly. I couldn't believe I had stumbled onto it. It felt like winning the lottery of stumbling onto something so weird. The body was obviously put there, and I became aware that the nice woman I was working for might have committed murder and put this body there. From what I could tell, it was an adult, but I couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman. I actually called my boss from under the house, and he told me to get out right away and tell the homeowner. I got all detective on him and said I shouldn't tell her and maybe our company should just call the cops. He said no and insisted that I tell her right then. I did, and she was shocked, asking if I was sure and all that. I told her I was pretty damn sure I had just found a rotting corpse under her house, and she called 911. I left the house without finishing my work, of course, and I wasn't able to find out if she had done it or what the hell the deal was with it all. I looked online, but never found a thing. Sometimes I feel like driving up there to see if her SUV is still parked there. It honestly wasn't too scary after it set in, but when I first saw the corpse, I swear it looked like the skeleton was looking right at me. I work at a pizza joint in Chicago, and I unfortunately have the shitty responsibility of delivering pizzas, usually on the weekends, and usually at night. I've asked my boss for day shifts, but she seems to ignore my requests and give me whatever shifts I don't want the most. I know being a pizza delivery man is somewhat of a dangerous job, but I never imagined anything like what happened to me a few months ago could actually happen. There is this one customer that always calls in and acts strange as hell on the phone. Sometimes he will just hang up on you. Sometimes he'll order pizzas normally, but make crazy sounds while he does, and then hang up. We've always thought this guy was just an idiot playing pranks. He would make really weird comments too, like, "I want to order a large pizza with pineapples, mustard, and your skin." I'll never forget that one. We usually just hang up on his ass now, and we always know it's him calling because his number is saved in our system. So he called again a few months ago and ordered a pizza normally. No bullshit, no weird comments or sounds, and gave his address too. I thought it would be interesting to finally deliver to this guy, and when I drove up to his house, it was something you'd see in a scary movie. An old as hell looking place right on the line where we don't deliver. Not in the busy part of the city where most of our orders come in. The house looked like it was about 100 years old, and there were no lights on that I could see. I wasn't scared or anything, just looking forward to seeing what he looked like. When I went to the front door, I rang the bell, but it wasn't working, so I knocked. I realized I forgot the guy's soda and thought he'd give me shit for sure, or just freak out on me. Nobody answered right away, so I knocked again on this big door. He opened up after that second time. He was wearing this weird-looking mask around his mouth. Only his mouth. His eyes were opened wide, and I told him how much the pizza was, and that I was sorry I forgot the drink. He looked down, I think, and then said, "It's okay," and then looked at me again. I stood there looking at him for like 5 seconds in silence when I got bored of his shit, and told him the amount again. He said okay, and then asked me, "Has anyone ever attacked me before?" I told him no, and if they did, they'd be sorry. He then took off his mask that was covering his mouth, and he had big-ass scars all around his mouth. I have no idea what they were from, and can't even imagine what they might have been from, but he looked seriously messed up. He smiled at me, and his lips were all cracked. I noticed he wasn't about to hand me some money, so I told him I was leaving. I turned around and started walking down the steps, and he screamed at me and slammed the door. This bastard was crazy, and I don't think any of his shit was to be funny. That final scream he gave me was creepy as hell, even though I kind of expected him to do something like that. He has called several times since then, and we always just tell him now that he is on our no-delivery list. He usually just screams and hangs up, or cusses out whoever is on the phone. Hello. I want to share a scary story that happened to me when I was 10 years old. It happened at my house in the middle of the night. I woke up to get some water, as I usually did. I walked out of my bedroom and went down the stairs. My house was two stories, but really, it was three if you count the set of stairs you have to climb to reach the front door and the back door. So this was my usual routine. I would wake up somewhere around 2 a.m. and go downstairs to get water. I would stand in the kitchen and drink while looking out the back window and down at our backyard. I always did this and would imagine how scary it would be if I saw somebody back there. This one night, I did see someone back there. As I was drinking my water, I saw a figure standing against the fence in the back of the yard. I didn't know what they were doing or if they were looking at me, but they were dressed in all black. I stood there frozen with fear until the person started moving. They started walking nonchalantly across my backyard. It was terrifying to see. They were walking over to the wooden steps to get to the back door. I ducked down and ran back up the stairs as fast as I could. I tried opening my dad's bedroom door, but it was locked. I knocked and knocked. It took forever for him to finally say, "Yeah." I tried whispering that somebody was in our backyard, but also loud enough to where he could hear me. Nothing happened, so I repeated myself a little bit louder. He finally opened the door and I started crying. I told him I saw a person in our backyard. He told me to go in his room, and I did, while he went down the stairs. I waited for a minute and couldn't handle it, so I left his room and slowly started going down the stairs again. Before I could reach the bottom, he turned the corner and scared me, saying nobody was back there. I told him I saw somebody for sure walking towards the door, and he went back over to the kitchen to look out the window. We both looked out and saw nothing, saw nobody. After him asking me numerous times if I was sure, he called the police. They arrived pretty fast, and they checked our backyard, the front yard, everywhere, but didn't find anyone. We went back to sleep and nothing else happened. For some reason, the person didn't try to enter our house. I'll never forget seeing that person back there, though, and I still can't look out my windows at night. I was home alone one night when I was a teen. Everything was fine until I woke up in the middle of the night to get some water. I walked out of my room, down the stairs, and as soon as I hit the bottom landing, I saw that there was a figure sitting in the old chair in our living room. I stood there for a few seconds, completely in shock and terror. The person sitting there began to move and stand up. I turned and fled back up the stairs. I ran back into my room and slammed and locked my door. Completely in tears, I sat on my bed in the dark, staring at the door. My dad appeared at my door not 10 seconds after I closed it and asked why I just slammed my door and what was going on. I opened up for him, and in between my sobs, I told him I saw somebody downstairs. I asked if it was him, and he said no, that he had just come from his bedroom right next to mine. It was just the two of us living there. He checked the house and found nobody except an old-looking business card for this hotel in our city. It was tucked between the cushions of the chair. He checked into it, but nothing became of it to my knowledge. It was the scariest night of my life. This happened on a Friday. I was in high school, and I had just walked home after school. I walked into my house, and my parents weren't home yet. This was typical. They got off work at 5, and I was always home alone for a couple hours after school. I was sitting in my bedroom, watching TV. I was sitting on the edge of my bed, and my bedroom door was open. As I was watching, someone walked by my bedroom very fast and scared the living shit out of me. I'm an only child, and I knew that whoever had just walked by was not supposed to be in my house. I got up and thought about jumping out of my bedroom window. I was very creeped out and decided that was probably the best idea. I opened my window and crawled out. Luckily, my bedroom was on the first floor, and when I hit the grass, I turned around and looked up at my window, mortified that I'd see somebody standing there, or somebody about to jump out after me. Relief. Nobody was there. I ran to the gate, and the damned lock was so old and rusted, it made so much noise trying to undo the damn thing to open it. I got it open after making so much noise and ran to the street and started going down the sidewalk. I stopped, and my heart sank when I realized I had changed my pants into gym shorts when I got home, and my cell phone was still in my jeans pocket. There was no way I was going back inside, but I did start walking back toward my house, and when I reached it, I stopped and tried to see somebody through my front window. Of course, I didn't. I walked up to my front door and very quietly opened it. It creaked open very slowly, and as soon as the door stopped after hitting the closet door behind it, I heard somebody say, "Get out." I sprinted away and called my dad at the grocery store that was kind of close to our house. He came to the store to pick me up, and I told him we should call the cops, but he wasn't afraid, and he just walked right into the house when we got home. Nobody was in there, and he assured me that he checked everywhere. I only went inside when he said he was 100% sure there was nobody inside the house. Early the next morning, I woke up because my bedroom was freezing. I sat up, and my window was wide open. It was winter, and there was no way in hell I would leave it open the way it was. I told my dad, but he, of course, didn't really believe me. My mom seemed a bit creeped out because she could see how serious I was. Whoever had walked by my bedroom was still in there. They were in my room while I slept. When I was 24 years old, I experienced something so strange, so scary, that I just had to write about it and share it with the world. It is absolutely true and was the scariest thing that has ever happened in my life. I was traveling at the time, going to visit my best friend who had moved a few states away from me to go to college. One day, I was driving in Ohio, if I remember correctly. I was on a long highway that stretched across the state when out of nowhere, my car died. I shifted to the side of the road where I eventually came to a stop. I didn't run out of gas. I had just filled up at the last town. I tried starting my car, and I was very happy when it actually started. I was confused and was worried about why the hell it just died on me. As I started to pick up speed and get back on track, my car started making weird noises, and it sounded like something was grinding on something else. I looked up and saw a sign that showed that there was a gas station and food at the next exit. My car was moving, but with this grinding noise, I decided to get off the highway and take a look at it at the gas station. There were only two places off this exit that I could see. A gas station with one pump, and an old-looking diner not too far off next to it. I pulled into the gas station, and it looked closed. I checked my watch and quickly realized this was strange as hell. It was only 2:30 p.m. What kind of gas station closes before this time? I got out of my car and approached the glass door entrance to the station. I put my hands up and cupped the glass around my eyes to see inside. The place looked abandoned. It was obvious nobody was there, and I turned and looked around me. I felt a bit uneasy at this moment when I saw that no other people or cars were around me. What the hell? Where am I? I checked my phone, and of course, I had no service. I looked up at the sky, and it was white. The clouds were moving fiercely, and it was cold as hell outside. I decided to get back in my car and drive it over to the diner. When I reached this place, I thought for sure it was closed as well. But to my surprise, before I could even reach the door after getting out of my car, an old woman opened the door to the place and greeted me with a smile. She looked nice, and I was so relieved to see somebody else and maybe get some hot food in my stomach. She said hello and asked if it was just me, did I want a booth, blah, blah, blah. I told her yes, it was only me, and a booth sounded fine. This diner looked very old-fashioned, and there was no other customers inside. The woman showed me to my seat, and I scooted into the booth. I looked up at her, and she was wearing an old apron with stains all over it. Her teeth were old, cracked, and yellow. She had a pleasant voice, though, and she seemed to be a very nice person. She handed me a menu and asked what I'd like to drink. I told her a Coke or Pepsi would be great, and she smiled and said she'd be right back. I sat there looking at this menu, and there was dirt on it. It looked like it had been sitting outside for years. I cleaned it off, and the food that was on it that was available was very basic. Burger, chicken sandwich, fries, salad. That was pretty much it. I decided to order the burger with some fries. A few minutes passed, and she hadn't returned with my drink yet. I was anxious to ask her if there was a mechanic around that could look at my car. A few more minutes passed, and I started thinking, what the hell is going on back there? I yelled out, hello? In as nice a voice as possible. I got no response. At this point, I was annoyed, and I got up. I walked over to the door that led into the back cooking area and swung it open, about to ask where my drink was. To my surprise, the back of the diner was empty. There was no cooks, no fryers, no grills, nothing. The woman was nowhere in sight. It was obvious that this diner was not a running establishment, and I felt sick to my stomach. I started to walk into the back area when I heard the scariest, most evil old lady laugh I've ever heard. I stopped and backed up out the door into the front. I turned and walked out the door I came in from. I ran down the 3 steps and over to my car and got inside. Thank God my car started, and I floored it out of there. As I was driving away, I looked into my rearview mirror and saw the woman standing in the middle of the road. I spent the night at my girlfriend's house one night and had to leave really early in the morning to go to work. So early, it was still dark outside when I left, and would be for a few more hours. She lived in a rural town about 60 miles from my house and work, and when I got in my car and started driving, there wasn't the usual street lights lining the roads to guide me. The only light came from my headlights. About 10 miles into my drive, my car started to slow down and eventually came to a stop. I first checked my gas, and it was almost full. I'm not very car trouble savvy, so I dug my phone out of my jacket pocket and swiped the screen. Nothing happened. I realized that my phone was dead, and immediately after that, I came to the realization that I had forgot to plug it in last night before we went to sleep. So here I was, stuck in my car, on the side of a rural street, pretty much in the middle of nowhere, I started thinking of things to do. I could start walking. No. Bad idea. It was dark as hell out here, and I wouldn't be able to see anything while walking. And on top of that, somebody could hit me. I concluded the only thing I could do was sit in my car and wait for daylight, which is a very stressful and scary thing to have to come to terms with. It was winter, and I started getting cold. I tried starting my car over and over, to no avail. I gave up and crossed my arms. I sat in the dark car, on the dark street, for about 10 minutes just looking into the darkness in front of me, before I squinted my eyes and noticed somebody walking toward my car directly in front of me. They were about 30 yards away. The only thing I could see was the outline of their body. They stopped walking right after I noticed them. I got really scared and just gazed at this outline for the longest time. In a sudden movement, they started walking again, but fast. In a few seconds, they reached my driver's side door and tried opening it. Did they think the car was empty? Holy hell, did they see me in here? I leaned away from the door and window, onto the center console. After failing to open my locked door, they stood there for a moment, and then very suddenly turned and walked away in the direction they came from. I was so confused and creeped out at this. Why would they walk back that way, the way they came? I sat there in the dark wondering what just happened, when all of a sudden, I saw two headlights come on in front of me. The car was parked on the same side of the road as mine, but facing me. Had the person stopped when they saw my car? What would they do next? How did I not see them stop there? After a few moments, they started their engine and turned their car around, driving off down the road. A few hours later, the sun was rising, and a truck stopped next to me and asked if I was having trouble. I asked if I could use their cell phone, and with it, I called my girlfriend, who picked me up soon after.
I met a college girl that I was living with in a defunct fraternity house. They had lost their charter for reasons I didn't first know. We fell for each other, and I moved in with her. It was a great apartment complex with pool tables and giant showers. One night when we were drunk, she took me to a room that was empty. It had two bunk beds, and above one bed was a secret door. It led to an upstairs room where most of the hazing took place. The story goes that one night during a party, in the dead of winter, a girl was raped by some frat boys. They just left her up there in the cold, and she ended up dying from freezing to death. One of the frat boys was so distraught by the incident that he went up there one day and painted her picture on the wall, then hung himself from the rafters. Whilst we were up there, I could swear that the eyes on the picture would follow you around the room, and there were reports of crying coming from up there some nights. I never went up there again.
This happened ages ago, when I used to babysit. I was maybe 13 at the time, living in the countryside and was babysitting most of the children on my street, which was around 20 houses. This particular neighbor would love to go out on Wednesday, because there would always be this Latin dance class that was going on in a nearby bar. So I was used to babysitting for her and knew that she'd always come back very late. That specific night, the oldest of the three was a little difficult and didn't want to go to sleep. I struggled putting him into bed, and afterwards was quite tired. I studied my maths a little, and around midnight decided to take a nap until the kid's mum came back. A few minutes after falling asleep, I hear someone frantically knocking on the door trying to open it. It was the neighbor with her two young children. It was winter and we easily had 3 feet of snow and temperatures outside that must have been around minus 21 degrees C or minus 5 Fahrenheit. The kids only had their pajamas on and an unzipped jacket. She was wearing jeans, a wool shirt and winter boots. I could see genuine fear in her eyes as I struggled unlocking the door. I panicked and had her walk all the way around the house to the patio door. When she got in, she quickly told me to bring all the children downstairs and turn off all the lights and to not answer the door to anyone. The kids kept asking, "Who is Daddy going to kill? Who is Daddy going to kill?" And she kept muting and saying nothing was going to happen. And then she left. I woke all the kids up and brought them into the playroom in the basement and asked them to play silently. The oldest, who hadn't been asleep for very long, was asking what was going on, and I kept telling him it was a special occasion where he could come and play late with his neighbor's friends. I calmed down the two other children, telling them that no one was going to die. But in my mind, my time had come. I could see myself being shot whilst trying to protect these children. I was trying to figure out how to stay alive, or at the very least how to keep them alive. I wasn't trying to be a hero, but I was trying to convince myself that if it came down to that, I would have to try and protect them. I called 911, but started shaking and crying so much I didn't know what to do. It was an answering machine asking if I wanted the cops or an ambulance or firefighters. I called my mum, quickly told her what was going on, and she called the cops and joined me. As she got in the driveway, the neighbor's husband was walking up the street with a huge axe. My mum got into the house, locked the door and cracked open a window, and asked what was going on whilst he approached the house. He asked her to come out and confront him, thinking it was his wife. My mother then explained to him that she was the babysitter's mother and came after getting a worried 13-year-old's call. He then asked us to give him his wife, but we didn't know where she was. He argued a little with my mum, but she was so calm it calmed him down. I still admire her for that night. After about 15 minutes of arguing, he walked back home carrying his axe, and a few seconds later, his wife knocked on the patio door behind the house and came in. She was crying and apologizing to my mother for the whole situation. She thought her neighbor was home, not the babysitter. My mother asked me to go check on the kids while she was taking care of the wife. A few minutes later, two police cars arrived and they came in and spent time with the wife asking tons of questions, then me and then my mother. In the meantime, the woman I was babysitting for arrived and they interviewed her as well. They asked me and my mother if we were ready to go to court if the woman pressed charges against her husband, but surprisingly, she never did. Turns out that she had just announced to her firefighter husband that she was sleeping with her boss in order to get a raise because they were struggling financially. He got his firefighting axe and said that he was going to kill the bastard, but she wanted to stop him. That's why she brought the kids and left. I was always scared of him after that, and whenever I saw his children, I would check if they had any signs of violence. But they moved around 6 months later, and we moved 2 years after.
I went to a high school that was built maybe 200 to 300 years ago. Me and my friends noticed these hatches that were about 6 feet off the floor next to the toilets. For context, the school was based around a quad, so there was a toilet down some stairs at each corner of the quad. Obviously, we had to check these hatches out, so we did it during a drama lesson that we snuck out of. We got in there, and there was a corridor under the actual corridor, which was only about 5 to 4 feet tall, so we had to crawl through it. The corridor connected all the toilets, and there were vents on the top of the walls that were the skirting board level in the classroom, so we could watch lessons going on, which was pretty cool. There were tons of pipes and electrical wires, and other non-interesting shit you would expect, apart from in one corner of the quad though. The hatch for this one was locked from the inside. It looked like the pipes had all gone back into the wall, or stopped so that the wall was bare concrete slab, rather than bricks, which was odd. There was a small gap at the bottom of the wall that I could only just fit through. It was a struggle crawling under as we had our mobiles for torches, and I'm not the smallest of people. When we got through, it felt so much colder in this opening than it did in the corridor. The space was also much more spacious, and we could actually stand up. And also, the lights from our torches didn't light up the opposite side of the room. When we shone them over there, it was as if they weren't even turned on. The room smelled really bad, and I saw what looked like a decomposed cat, which was now just mostly bone and fur, at the side, next to the wall closest to us. Freakier still though, there was a stone arch above where the cat was, with some red writing that I think was blood. It was a few years ago, but I vaguely remember it saying something along the lines of, "If you are found here, the school will expel you, but Lucifer shall do much worse." There were a few scratches in the wall, and some symbols that we thought were letters but we couldn't make them out. We instantly got the hell out of there, because we were shitting bricks at this point. It was a fairly prestigious school, so expulsion was probably the scariest thing that could happen to us. Nonetheless, we never ventured to that room again.
I worked at a hospital, doing transport for a couple of years. The transport home base was in the basement of a hospital, where all the laundry was done, as well as supplies being sorted there. I hated working there, since after the incident I'm about to tell you. On this particular night, I was the only one in the basement, when I heard whistling at the end of the hallway by the elevator. I poked my head around the corner, fully expecting to see my only co-worker on duty that night. But there was absolutely no one there. I shrugged it off. I'm not easily spooked, and nights are always slow. So I sat back, chilled in the break room for a little while, and ate some snacks. Next thing I know, though, I hear a loud bang. I walked into the hallway and a bed was rolling down the hall, bumping into the sides. It was very creepy, and at this point I seriously think my coworker is trying to bullshit me. So I radio him and ask him where he is. He tells me that he's in the cafeteria on the top floor of the building. Ah, I still don't believe him. He must be playing a joke, and I'm convinced I will catch him in the act. A few minutes later, I walk past the laundry room, and the moment I pass, I hear the machine start up. I poke my head in, and I don't see him at all in that room. I've got to admit, I was starting to get a little nervous. So then I walk into the laundry room. and the moment that both my feet stepped foot in there, all the machines simultaneously stop. I freeze, and then run out and head towards the elevator, and that's when I hear the whistling again. At this point, I know I am the only worker in the basement. As I am standing there waiting for the elevator, things start falling off the shelf down the hall. Boxes of gloves, tissues, packages of tubes. I am literally standing there and watching them all fall off one by one at the opposite end of the hallway. I shit you not. My entire body broke out in goosebumps. My hair stood on the end, and I had a strong gut feeling that I was being watched. I know I was not alone. As I'm getting onto the elevator, I feel what feels like someone brushing my arm. I went upstairs and found my co-worker still in the cafeteria. I freaked out to him and got out of there as quickly as I could, and transferred soon after that. The creepy thing to add to it all is that I whistle mindlessly to myself whilst I'm working, and it's almost as if the spirit that was there was trying to mimic me. Creepiest feeling ever. My family used to own and run a real estate office. My grandfather owned it and was the boss, and my mother managed the rent roll and the clients. I worked there on weekends as a teenager. We worked in a very multicultural area, which I always loved, and there was always a reasonable Maui Islander community there, and a lot of whom were very religious. In one particular property we managed, there was this one family who had two sons. One of them played football with my younger brother, and the other is the subject of this incident. So this kid was 11, I think, and according to the family, was beginning to act strangely. He would have violent outbursts and say terrible, terrible things. Apparently, he was seriously out of control, and the family called their Baptist minister and asked what they should do. Was there even anything that they could do? The minister told them that he was free one evening later that week, and that he would bring the things needed for a baptism. He said that he would perform an exorcism for them. As a good spiritual leader, good religious people, and a baptism could oust an evil spirit. The evening arrived, and the minister got all set up. He got into this deep tub that they all filled with water for the baptism. He chose some passages from the Bible that would help with the exorcism, and got the whole family together around to support and pray. Now, Islander families tend to be large. There were aunts, uncles, cousins, and grandparents. Everyone was there and willing to help this child. The parents are instructed to bring out the kid, so the father goes to get him. But the kid was an absolute catastrophe. He was described as being like the Tasmanian devil from the cartoons, just all over the place. His dad put the boy over his shoulders and brought him down to where everyone was standing. The kid fighting every step, but with his father being an absolutely enormous man, he didn't stand a chance. The minister said for everyone to gather around and put their hands on the child and pray for him. The father held him in the middle of the family group, and everyone reached out their hands to touch the boy who was thrashing around like a wild thing. What I heard was that it seemed like the boy was totally out of control. Time comes for the minister to say whatever he said, and then for them to get him into the tub for the baptism, which was supposed to expel the demon they figured was possessing him. The father and uncle or something were the ones who got him in the tub. and the family stood around praying their hearts out. But the boy tried to escape the second his body hit the water. He put up a crazy fight, and more family members came in to get him into the water. Finally, they got him in and were able to hold him there and hold him and hold him and hold him. They didn't mean to do it, but they drowned him. He was an 11-year-old boy on the cusp of puberty. Of course, his behavior was erratic. Of course, his attitude was awful. Of course, he fought being held down by his own family. What did they think was going to happen? The parents, uncle, and minister all got arrested. The uncle got off as an accessory charge. The parents got 10 years but were out sooner. And the minister got 15 and was in for the whole time because he was the leader. He should have known better. My mum had to go back and talk to the police and be a character witness about the family and the property and whatnot. Obviously, as we didn't know them all that well, we can hardly talk about the kid and whether he was possessed or not. But I can tell you that it was probably the saddest thing I've ever heard. And even if he was possessed, he didn't deserve for that to happen to him. This story takes place in August of 2013, in the mountains of South Oregon. I am a USAF Security Forces airman, in other words, a military policeman. My girlfriend was at work. And, as a swelteringly hot day began to turn into thunderstorms, my buddy Nick and I decided to go exploring some back roads and get out of the heat in town. South Oregon is crisscrossed with logging roads, some actively used, and many totally forgotten and grown over. Nick and I spent many of our days searching on roads that we knew, finding roads that we did not, and driving for hours into the mountains, eventually navigating back to paved roads. On this particular day, with storm clouds building over the mountains, we set off on a road that we'd never been on before and began the drive into the mountains. After driving for about an hour, we hadn't seen nor heard any signs of any other people in the woods. We rounded a bend into the thick fir woods and emerged into a meadow that was totally surrounded by thick aspen groves. The meadow was perfectly flat and eerily still. We both noticed the strange stillness almost immediately. No birds, hardly any insect noises. No squirrels, and certainly no other people. On the far side of the meadow, right at the edge of the tree line, there was a picnic table. The table was very odd, however. It was painted a bright orange, and was much larger than a typical picnic table in a park. Remarking on this, Nick drove through the meadow to get a closer look. I remember being apprehensive as we approached. The whole scenario was exceptionally strange. The overall silence of the aspen grove was unsettling. Also, it was nearly impossible to see far into the trees, as aspens grow extremely close together. When we parked by the table, I hopped out the passenger seat of the truck to check it out. I'm not very tall. Only about 5'5", but regardless, the table was ridiculously oversized and practically unusable. The seats were nearly at chest level, meaning I would have to climb up to even sit on them. As I was looking at the table, Nick called me over to the truck, and I noticed that he was looking back into the aspens. At first, I couldn't see what he was looking at. But then I noticed a splash of color that was completely out of place in the thick trees. A small one-man tent was set back in the trees, about 50 feet away from this strange table. I had an initial feeling of dread hit me, and felt certain that there was someone in that tent, and if we could see the tent, they could undoubtedly see us. There were no campgrounds in the area, no people, no main roads for miles. Surely, someone camping so remote would be, well, at the very least, a strange person. However, as we observed the tent, we didn't see any movement, nor hear any strange sounds coming from it. Nick suggested that I call out. I didn't want to, but I did. Hey, anyone in there? There was no reply. Feeling completely on edge, Nick and I thought about driving away and leaving this strange area. But we began to fear the worst. What if there was a body in that tent? What if somebody had gotten kidnapped? Foolish, I know, but we thought it just the same. After some debate, we decided to have Nick turn the truck around to drive away from the campsite, should there be any need to leave in a hurry. He would be waiting at the wheel, my heart pounding. I started walking through the trees towards the tent. I was totally keyed up, with my senses on full alert. When I reached the campsite, several things struck me as odd. Backpacks were scattered all over. No fire had been built, and no wood collected. The tent. It was literally full of backpacks and women's clothing. Full of dread, I turned to leave to tell Nick what I had seen. As soon as I left, I heard Nick begin to yell, "Let's go, let's get out of here!" Not knowing what he was yelling about, I ran back to the truck. When I broke out of the trees, I saw a beat-up old Ford Taurus on the road, blocking us from leaving the meadow. I immediately leapt into the passenger seat, and Nick floored the gas pedal. The car was occupied by two men, and the third person was laying against the window of the back seat. As we drove across the meadow, the driver attempted to block us from the road. But Nick drove around them and accelerated the way that we'd come from. I looked back and saw the car attempting to turn around on the narrow road. Nick drove like a madman, and though I was honestly terrified that they would catch up, we hit the highway without seeing the car again. I still don't know if the person in the back was male or female. I called the state police, and they promised to send a trooper out to check the scene. I received a call the next day from the trooper, stating that the campsite and the backpacks and all the women's clothing was gone, though he could tell that people had been in the area. The strange table was still by the thick aspen grove, and I have not returned to the area and do not have any intention of doing so again.
Back when I was attending a university, I used to work on campus at one of the dining halls during the dinner and night shift. I lived in the next town over, since it was cheaper to live in a terrible little apartment out of town than to live on campus in the dorms. But I didn't own a car, so I had to take the bus. One night, I had just gotten off a shift at work. My feet were killing me, and I was completely exhausted as I slowly made my way to the bus stop. I noticed a man much older than me sitting on one of the two benches at the otherwise empty bus stop, but I didn't pay too much attention to him. I simply sat down on the second bench and listened to some music while waiting for the bus to arrive. The first sign that things were starting to get weird was when I kept noticing out of the corner of my eye that he was staring at me. At first, I thought I might be imagining it, so I looked over and caught him quickly turning his head to look away. Okay, so he was staring at me. This wasn't completely out of the ordinary, since being a young college girl seemed to gain a bit of attention from older men. So like usual, I just ignored him, and that was a mistake. Again, out of the corner of my eye, I saw him look at me, but instead of just staring this time, he got up and walked over to sit next to me instead. I continued listening to my music, hoping that he'd see the earbuds and take the hint that I wasn't interested in having a conversation. Instead, this man literally took the earbud out of my ear. "Hey there, sweetheart," he said, as my head snapped to look at him in shock. I should have told him off for touching my things and demanded he leave me alone, but I was sort of frozen and didn't want to make him mad. "Hi," I replied quietly. He started introducing himself as Mike, and telling me that he lived in the area and it was always nice to see pretty girls like me at the university bus stop. He explained that he was a real man, unlike the boys I went to school with, and that I should go home with him that night. I was shy, scared, and I'd never had a man as bold as this in my face. I say to my face because I had certainly gotten my fair share of unsolicited private pictures online by that point, but I digress. I didn't know how to respond, so I didn't. But that didn't stop Mike from continuing to explain to me all of the fun things he wanted to do with me at his place that night. He went into graphic detail. The things he described started out with basic things you'd expect and escalated to him asking if I liked being choked until I turned purple and passed out in bed. I wish there were anyone else at that bus stop, but it was just the two of us in the dark, as I counted the seconds until the bus would arrive. Then Mike took things to a different level of shocking by telling me, "Listen, the demons want me to ask for your phone number, and they say you should give it to me, or you won't like what happens." He actually had the audacity to start stroking my hair. His hand was gentle, but I didn't want him touching me at all. This was shocking for a number of reasons. The demons? I wouldn't like what would happen. Why was he touching me? What was this guy talking about? As though he could read my mind, Mike went on to explain, "My therapist knows the demons are real. I told her about them, and she says I'm not crazy and the demons are real." He laughed and abruptly stopped. "Now give me your number like they said," he demanded, and as his hand stroked my hair for the last time, he stopped and gripped the back of my neck, still gentle, but even more terrifying. I was scared and obviously didn't want him to have my phone number, but he was taking out his phone and I knew he was going to call the number I gave him to make sure I wasn't lying to him, and he still had his hand on the back of my neck, so I reluctantly gave him my real phone number. Stupid, I know. But I was right, and he immediately called to check. All I could think about was just not making this guy angry long enough to get away from him, then block his number. Thankfully, the bus came moments later. I sat down as close to the front of the bus near the bus driver as I possibly could, since the bus was basically empty. Mike decided to sit directly across from me. At this point, I had tried listening to music again, hoping that being on the bus and him having my phone number would signal to him the end of our conversation. However, he decided to reach over and unzip my sweatshirt, revealing my work shirt and the name tag which I had unfortunately forgotten to remove in my haste to leave work that night. I hadn't told him my name yet. "Abigail. What a beautiful name. Our daughter will be named Celeste." I shouldn't have been shocked at this point, but I was. I stopped listening to music again and zipped my sweatshirt back up, which made him laugh. "You won't need that soon, anyway," he said and winked at me, implying how he planned to undress me even further that night. At one stop, Mike tried to convince me to get off the bus with him. I told him no, that I was tired and just wanted to go home, so he said okay and stayed on the bus. I knew that had been his stop, so The fact that he was staying on the bus worried me. I was sure this meant that he was planning on coming home with me instead.
"Baby,"
Mike whispered to me. I tried to ignore him, but he repeated himself louder.
"Baby."
He had the most unsettling smile on his face as I asked,
"What?"
He laughed and told me,
"The demons say you smell nice."
I was terrified and I felt like I was going to throw up by the time that my bus stop arrived. I lived in an apartment alone and didn't want him to know where I lived. Despite my body being exhausted and sore from work, adrenaline kicked in and I bolted off the bus and ran straight home. I made it inside and locked the door. I looked through the peephole and didn't see him, so I went to carefully peek out of the window and saw him standing near the bus stop looking around. He took out his phone and sure enough, I started getting a call from an unknown number since I hadn't saved his number. I ignored it. When he hung up, I started getting several texts asking where I'd gone, how he didn't like hide and seek, and how the demons just wanted to have fun, but I was being a little baby about it. I was so scared because he knew which apartment building I lived in, where I worked, where I went to school, my phone number, and my name. The only thing which made me feel slightly relieved was that he didn't know which specific apartment I lived in. And that's when he started yelling outside. There was no specific word said, just wordless yells of what I can only assume were frustration and anger. I blocked his number and kept all the lights in my apartment off as I cried with my back to the front door. Maybe I should have called the police, but my brain was so frazzled that I didn't even think of that until the next day, and by then all I knew about him was that he was a mentally unstable man, probably named Mike, who hadn't actually done any physical harm to me, so I didn't think it was worth it. In hindsight, I know that I made a lot of stupid mistakes during this experience. I ended up moving away entirely at the end of that term of school for unrelated reasons, but until then I switched to day shifts at work and was paranoid every night. Thankfully, I never saw that deranged man again. I've never been a babysitter, unless you count looking after my little brother on the odd occasion, but I do have a babysitter story for you all. This all happened back when I was about 10 or 11, as it was the last year of primary school for me, and I remember being really excited about going to big school, as my mom and dad phrased it. They were off to some work function, and I needed a babysitter. I distinctly remember them being worried that they wouldn't be able to go, as I think they left it quite late and were worried that they wouldn't be able to find a sitter. I didn't want to be left alone with a stranger, so I remember being absolutely gutted when they said they'd managed to find someone to stay for a few hours on a Saturday evening. But when the time came and the babysitter arrived, I remember thinking that it wouldn't be so bad. She was very pretty and seemed genuinely lovely. Some university student called Sarah, I can't quite remember, but she pretty much won my parents over in the first few minutes, and well, since they liked her so much, I kind of liked her too. She told me we'd have a little slumber party, that we could watch my favorite film, and my parents sweetened the deal by saying that they'd leave us money for some pizza. So I really did perk up for a bit as they showed the girl around the house and actually warmed up to the idea as they left the house, and Sarah, who we'll just call her now for the story's sake, she began to order us pizza. Only that's when things started to get a bit weird. She asked me what my favorite topping was, in a voice that didn't sound nearly as jolly as before. When I told her I liked pepperoni the most, still my favorite, she just laughed and told me she was a vegetarian. I tried to tell her we could always get two smaller pizzas, but she just ignored me as she placed an order for a large spicy veggie one. I hated spice, and I still do. I can't handle chilies for the life of me, even as a grown-up, so the younger me was absolutely heartbroken that I'd been pretty much shut out of the pizza party that we were supposed to be throwing. And it all went downhill from there. There was a knock at the door a little while after she called, and I suspected it was the delivery guy, but it wasn't. From the top of the stairs, I watched as some lad in his own clothes stepped out of the cold and into our hallway. I was confused as to what was going on, where the pizza was and all that, but when the pair of them started sharing this really horrible wet kiss, I got on to the fact that it was obviously her boyfriend or something. And this is all after hearing my parents make it clear to her that she wasn't allowed any company around. So I was really bloody annoyed at this point, like, furious. So I snuck down into the kitchen to try and find the house phone to call my mom. Only it wasn't in the charger. I trot around for a wee bit trying to find the thing when I realize there's a good chance the babysitter had it with her. I walked down the hall to the living room where she and her boyfriend were, open the door, and pretty much recoil at what I see. They're doing stuff, right there on the couch. Sarah screams at me to get out and shuts the door, and I respond with asking her for the phone. She doesn't even acknowledge my request, gets up from the couch with fury in her eyes and slams the door on me before screaming through the wood to get back up to my room and be quiet. I told her I was hungry, but again, absolutely no acknowledgement. So I went back up to my room and just bawled my eyes out. So it's pretty important to remember that this was like the mid-90s, back when the internet or mobile phones weren't exactly available or affordable for a family like mine. If this had happened nowadays, it would be a piece of pie to just phone my parents or, hey, even take a photo of the boyfriend being there, and that would be that. But I just didn't have those options available to me, and even if I had, this girl was so conniving that she probably had found a way around it. But that sort of maltreatment wasn't what scared me. Yeah, it was upsetting, but another danger became more of a priority when I realized that they had trapped the family dog inside the living room with them. I went back downstairs facing my fears and hoping I could at least get Jazz out of the room with them. She was an Australian Shepherd, one of those dogs that's dead shaggy but also looks like someone spilled a can of paint over them or something. I loved her so, so much, and I had to rescue her. So I knock on the living room door, only to get told to go away. I knock again, telling the babysitter that it was important that Jazz had to go outside to have a wee or for her to be taken on a walk so she could do a number two. Again, she barked at me to go away. I wasn't about to let this happen to my best friend in the world, though, so I pushed the door open just in time to see the boyfriend do something frankly unbelievable. So in England, we play cricket, don't we? And the balls are insanely hard. Like, I think they might be even harder than baseballs you Americans play with. Solid cork on the inside with a tough leather binding. People actually died from getting hit on the head with cricket balls. Jazz loved her cricket ball. We tried throwing tennis balls and stuff for her, but I think she just liked that leather smell the cricket ball gave off. Maybe it reminded her of actually chasing an animal or something. I don't know. But either way, I opened the door of the living room to find the boyfriend of the sitter just lashing the cricket ball at Jazz. So hard that when it hit her back leg, she yelped, all high-pitched. I tried to run in to rescue her, to pull her into my room where she could be safe, but the boyfriend was fast. He pushed me back into the hallway, shut the door, and then I'm certain he wedged something against it, because I couldn't open it at all from then on. I went up to my room and cried myself to sleep, only waking up to hear my parents talking to the sitter when they got home. I didn't make a sound. I was just too scared. For some reason, I had it in my head that the boyfriend would hurt them. I don't know. Kids are daft like that, I suppose, but of course, he wasn't there. He left before my mom and dad got home. I think the real nightmare was that the sitter had actually spun some pure sob story about how I'd been really bad and terribly behaved all evening, how I'd been a brat and demanded this, that, and the other, and they made a huge bloody mistake, the absolute wankers, because that cricket ball had left a huge welt on Jazz's hind leg, and when my dad found out that, I'd at least been partially telling the truth about what they'd been up to, and God, you should have seen how livid he was. I won't bore you with the petty details, but let's just say that that sitter and her boyfriend ended up actually getting arrested on animal cruelty charges, and I know for a fact that he ended up getting convicted and fined for it. So, I suppose a silver lining to a truly terrible night, but be careful who you're hiring to sit your kids, people. So, For the longest time in my teenage years, I earned a few bucks a week by doing babysitting work. It always made me giggle at how there are so many urban legends based around babysitting. The serial killer that stalks the unwitting teen, the call coming from inside the house, pretty much every Halloween movie in some manner that seems to present babysitting as the vocation of those with a death wish, when in reality, the only thing likely to kill you is the boredom. Sure, you get a bratty kid and it makes an evening a little more challenging, but you get a good one, and you're basically sat on the couch for hours on end, watching tedious cable TV shows and counting the minutes until the parents get home. Saying that, I did babysit for one family that ended in a frankly terrifying experience that ended up in me never, ever sitting for them ever again. It only happened once, but sometimes once is enough. So I arrive at this big old house a few blocks away from my parents' house at around 6:30 one Friday evening. The parents of the kid seem incredibly charming, and the kid is one of the more adorable little tykes that I've had the good fortune of minding. We go over a brief list of rules, what the kid is and isn't allowed to eat, how much I'll be paid and how long I'll be sitting for, and that sort of thing. Then the parents head out to whatever fancy party that they had been planning on attending. All goes well for a little while. The kid wouldn't eat their carrots, but when I pretended that they were delicious by taking little bites myself, they soon broke into a smile and pretty much demolished the little bowl of hummus that we were sharing. With the kid fed, I gave her a bath, tucked her into bed, and that's that. It was honestly one of the easier jobs I'd had, right up until the sun started to go down. So once the kid's asleep, I head downstairs to order a pizza on the parents' dollar. Like I said, they were perfectly nice and polite when we first met, and it's not often a job comes with free food. Pizza arrives pretty quickly, and I even tip the delivery guy a few dollars just to say thank you for being so fast. He's literally counting out the change in dollar bills when his head snaps to the side, like he's looking into the bushes at the side of the house. I ask him if everything is okay, peering out from the door to see what he's looking at. But there's nothing, just dark bushes. He says something along the lines of, sorry, guess I'm just tired. Mind's playing tricks on me. He laughs awkwardly, then walks back to his car while thanking me again for the tip. I didn't think anything of it. I mean, it was probably just a cat or something, right? So we got back inside to eat, have a full-on carb overload, and end up just lying there on the couch watching TLC. There were these big bay windows in the family's TV room, and I had drawn the curtains earlier to block out the glare on the TV. Only I hadn't drawn them all the way, and there was a slight crack in the curtains that allowed me to see into the dark front yard. At one point, my eyes were drawn to this little crack, and I could swear I saw a dark shape where streetlights were previously visible. I sit up, focusing my eyes on the shape and wondering if it were my mind playing tricks on me this time, when it moved. I wasn't going nuts. I had been looking at someone or something who was in turn looking at me through the big old windows. That's about when I started to freak out. I had been super chilled all evening, but now I was getting that distinctly paranoid feeling like someone was watching me, someone who didn't exactly have the best of intentions. I run around the house, making sure all the doors and windows are locked as a precaution, all before keeping their cordless phone as close as possible so that, if it came to it, I could call the cops. I was sure I had seen someone, but the chances of them just vacating the area at the sight of flashing lights then returning later could be a huge possibility and a terrifying one at that. So I decided to shoot my shot only when it would be absolutely necessary. Appearing to waste police time would not be doing me any favors. I suppose I'm just trying to explain why I didn't call the cops right away. I've had friends of mine say that they have just called 911 right then and there, but I wasn't 100% sure of anything right then. I'd seen a shape, not Michael Myers pointing a knife at me. Life isn't black and white most of the time, I was thinking. Anyway, I've secured all the windows and doors, shoved the cordless phone into my hoodie's front pouch, and had even positioned a Little League bat near the couch so that I was sort of armed. So by that point, I started to feel relatively safe again. If there was some creeper lurking outside looking to prey on a teenage babysitter, they would get one heck of a rude awakening when I waved my bat at them and screamed that the cops were on the way. So I lie back on the couch, but naturally find myself unable to relax. I open the curtains back up so I can see if anyone is hanging around in the front yard, keeping my eyes on the windows every so often in between watching whatever social train wreck is on TLC. Nothing happens for a while, and I start to think it was all just in my head or something. Right about the time I get up to wander into the kitchen to grab a drink of water. As I'm in there, I get that intense feeling that I'm being watched. I turn to see that same dark shape in the kitchen window, only this time, I rush into action. I hammer 911 into the phone, telling the dispatcher I need the cops to my address ASAP, that there's a home invasion in progress. I honestly don't know if it was the adrenaline or I was just sick of pervs thinking they can get away with stuff like that, but I just sort of charged. After screaming out that the cops were on their way, I ran into the TV room, grabbing the Little League bat, and just ran for the back door, which led out of the kitchen and into the backyard. What happened next is frankly astounding. As I ran at the guy, baseball bat in hand, ready to bash his brains out right there in the yard, I recognized him instantly. It was a face I'd seen before, not long ago at all. It was the kid's dad. So long story short, the dad of the kid I'd been babysitting had, for whatever reason, decided he needed to see what kind of babysitter I was. So apparently he drove his wife to whatever party they were headed to, turned back saying he'd forgotten something, then decided to watch me over the course of about an hour or two to see if I was worth the cash that they were spending. Obviously, since no crime was actually committed, there was no one to charge. The dad offered me a sincere apology, even offered me double the cash just to finish the night up, but I refused. No amount of money could have persuaded me to stay, and needless to say, I was very selective with who I babysat after that. This story happened to me and my friend. Her name was Jenny. We were in our mid-30s and we're both still single. We're roommates and we both have a really good time. We went to the same college together and have been best friends ever since we met. We have good paying jobs and live actually pretty exciting lives. We actually live in Philadelphia and absolutely love it here. So, me and Jenny have saved up a lot of money over our lives because we don't have any kids and we also didn't have boyfriends at the time. And before you even think it, no, we're not together. We're just very close friends who live our lives the way we want and not the way society tells us. But either way, we love shopping. We work hard so we can buy nice stuff whenever we want. That's kind of how it goes, right? We would always go on Saturday night. That was our secret shopping night. But after the virus, we were pretty much reluctant to go out. We've been working from home, and we do everything we can to stay safe and stay indoors, and as you might imagine, it has been extremely difficult. We live in a two-bedroom apartment in downtown Philadelphia. Our jobs went remote, and we felt guilty every time we left the house. It's been a rough little while. We got really excited when things started opening back up, and we hoped and prayed that life would continue as normal. We were both stuck in this tiny apartment and couldn't do anything other than watch TV or read the whole time. It was honestly kind of miserable. But when we officially got out of lockdown, we gave it a few weeks before we went anywhere still. We may have been bored to death, but we also didn't actually want to get sick. There wasn't a massive spike in cases or anything like that, so we figured that it would be okay to go out as long as we wore a mask. We went to all the stores we used to go to. We bought some clothes, perfume, shoes, and other girly things like that. It was honestly super fun. There was nothing like being able to go out and live again, have a good time. Sure, we were a little worried about getting sick, but we thought it would be fine as long as we wore our masks, and at once, to this day, neither of us actually gotten it. But for me and Jenny, the good times left just as quickly as they had come. We were in Target. We were checking out some of the men's sports gear. Jenny's brother had been trying to impress a girl at the gym he goes to, and we were trying to help him out. It was going to be a little something for his birthday. this guy walked up to me and actually tried flirting with me. He was a little abrasive about it, too. I mean, here I was standing with my friend looking at clothes, and this guy just invites himself into our little thing right here. And it just rubbed me the wrong way. And this wouldn't be the only thing that would rub me the wrong way. He kept asking me questions about where I worked and stuff like that. He was trying to act like some sort of cool guy, and I thought it was weird because he had to have been in his mid-20s. I don't mean to insult myself, but I definitely look my age. I had at least a decade on him, and it was obvious when he looked at us. Finally, he asked me for my number, and I said I didn't have one. He acted really irritated. He gave me a mean look, and then he said that he saw me using my phone earlier. And this is where things got out of control. He reached into my pocket and pulled my phone out. He started yelling and asking me, "What is this?" I told him to give me my phone back or I was going to call the police. He was obviously mentally ill or something. He finally threw my phone onto the floor and I picked it up. He was really angry and I had half a mind to just kick him in the groin. But I didn't want to have to fight him if I didn't have to. After all, he probably could have really hurt me if he wanted to. And I did my best to be calm, and so did Jenny. He walked away, and we thought that was that. We continued browsing through some of the stuff on the racks looking for something that Jenny's brother would like. I found a really nice pair of sweatpants that I thought would make him look really good when Jenny touched me on the shoulder. She told me to look over there. She motioned her hand in the direction, and I looked over, and it was the same creepy guy staring at us from the other side of the store. His hand was in his pants, and it just looked like the freakiest thing ever. But the way he was standing, it wasn't obvious that his hand was in his pants, if that makes sense. His arm was on the outside of the jacket, and you could only see where his arm was going if you saw the front of him, and we were the only people that could see him. I don't know what he was doing down there, but it wasn't anything that I'd ever seen before. By the way, his arm and body was moving, and looked more like he was squeezing one of those stress balls than anything else. I know that might sound funny, but when you and your best friend are both women and standing there watching this, it honestly can really freak you out. I looked over at Jenny and she was so scared that she was crying. That was when I finally had enough sense to speak to one of the managers. I called over for one of the employees and told them what the guy was doing. Of course, when I did, he stopped what he was doing and left the store. I went against my better judgment and didn't call the police at that point. Again, not a very good idea and something I really regret. I've learned my lesson, though, and I won't make that mistake again. We gave it another 45 minutes or an hour before we ended up leaving Target. We decided to just kill some time and keep looking for more stuff to get. We finally shut off the bad mood that we were in and got ready to check out. The guy that was working there told us he was really sorry about that and that he would walk us to our car if we wanted. We really appreciate that and took him up on his offer. And there was a decently sized parking lot that we shared between a couple of stores on the road. When me and Jenny stepped out of the Target, we immediately noticed that the guy was still out there. He started walking in our direction once we left the store. He was probably standing there since the time that he had left the store earlier. Thankfully, he darted off when he saw the Target employee with us. He was a bigger guy and looked like he worked out a lot. He told us that he would call the cops and let them know about this guy after we left. We thanked him a ton. I even handed him a $50 tip for being just such a good guy about the whole situation. After all, he didn't get paid to watch out for our safety, and I really appreciated that. Jenny and I drove home and got there safely. And that was the end of our story with that creepy guy. I'm really appreciative of that Target employee and other people like him. Sometimes the only thing standing between you and a predator is a selfless stranger looking out for your safety. Years ago, when I was a freshman in high school, I was in a foreign language class. The teacher assigned a class project and let kids pick their own partners. There was nobody in the class I was particularly wanting to work with, but I ended up picking the guy in the back of the class, Chris. Chris was about 6 feet tall and 300 pounds and had a horrible stutter, so nobody would ever pick him. I worked with Chris for about 35 minutes on the project and the teacher said, "Okay, class is almost over. exchange cell phone numbers so you can work on the project outside of class because I won't be giving you any more time to work on it in class. So we swap numbers and Chris turns to me and says, the short girl chose me today, huh? This will be interesting. And walked out of class. I tried to brush this off, but was admittedly a little weirded out by it. So I'm waiting to get picked up after school by a friend and notice that my cell phone has a new voicemail that's just shy of 4 minutes long. I listen, and it's Chris' mother saying how she's so excited that Chris has a new girlfriend and how we can get married whenever she would take us. Mind the fact that we're both no older than 15 at the time, and I've only talked to this guy about a school project for a period of about half an hour. I was really creeped out by it, but it was a weekend and my teacher had already left school, so I thought I would talk to her on Monday. All weekend, Chris was trying to text me, asking what I was wearing, where I was going, and even if I could come to his house so he could brush my hair when I was sleeping. I had this dude in like three other classes too, so I felt pretty stuck and I was freaking out. I had told him to stop texting me and not to worry about the project, that I could finish it if he just left me alone. On Monday, I instantly booked it to my teacher's classroom when I arrived at school. The teacher was just walking into her classroom, so I walked up to her and said, hey, I need to talk to you about my partner. When we both turned on the lights when we entered the classroom, Chris was sitting in a desk waiting for us. He looked at me and said, I won't let another short girl get away with this. I turned around and started running down the hallway. And I looked back and he was following me close behind, with the teacher a bit behind screaming at him to stop. He got close enough that he was able to trip me while I was running, resulting in me landing on my arm funny and completely breaking my thumb. He was laughing hysterically and trying to pin me down when the teacher came and pulled him off me, and security pursued shortly after due to the commotion. I went to an urgent care and got my thumb casted and didn't go to school the following day. But when I did come back, Chris wasn't there and it was never discussed again. It still creeps me out to this day.
When I was little, my parents divorced and I went to live with my dad as he was moving to a new town. We ended up buying this big house out in the country, outside a little podunk town. This house was huge for the two of us. But it was right on a little pond with an island, so it was cool. There were other houses around, but it was basically surrounded by cornfields, which scared the hell out of me because of the movie Children of the Corn, which had just come out. And it still terrifies me to this day. Anyway, freaky stuff started happening almost immediately after we moved in. On Halloween, my dad and I brought this huge pumpkin, carved it, and put it in the front window. We went out of town one night, and when we came back, it was smashed in the middle of the living room, 10 feet from where it was sitting. I didn't think much of it because my dad played it off, but I then heard him on the phone with his new girlfriend late that night, saying how freaky it was. He moved on pretty quick after Mum, straight player. Weird and random noises happened pretty much every night, and we just grew used to it. Even voices started. But my dad always told me it was the house settling. I have never heard a house say the name Jeffrey, even when it settles. That was when I would always hear someone calling out. But then there are two messed up instances that happened that first scared us into selling the place. Even years later, my dad still talks about how it freaked him out. The first was the night when we had a really bad storm. I was 10 or so. My dad was done letting me crawl into bed with him anymore, so I had to brave that on my own. It was about 3 in the morning, and this storm had been raging for a few hours. We hear this loud boom from the first floor. Both of our rooms were on the second, and then we hear glass shattering. My dad yells at me to stay upstairs, and he goes down to investigate. He came back up 20 minutes later and tells me to go to sleep. Turns out our bay windows had been blown out during the storm. The freaky thing was all the glass was outside the house, not in shards in the room. He got it fixed the next day and never mentioned it again. The second but when we had to pull down the attic that was in the hallway between my bedroom and the bathroom. One night I woke up to go to the bathroom, and as I was walking down the hall, I ran into the hanging attic door. My dad was sound asleep in his room, so it freaked me out. However, as I was walking back to my room after my piss, I ran into that door again. I heard some rustling going up on in there, and figured it was my dad, so walked past it towards his room, but he was in there snoring. I freaked out and told my dad. He got up, turned on his bedroom light, all angry at me. We both looked into the hall, and even though the hallway light was off, we could tell the attic was now closed. My dad was pissed, told me to go to bed, and turned off the light. To this day, I still turn on every damn light upstairs of my current house when I have to pee, much to the dismay of my wife. We moved soon later, and I have never gone back to that place. About a year ago, my family and I were visiting with my dad and stepmom. She was actually the girlfriend from the original story, and we got to talking about the house and how it tormented me. My stepmom said she stopped going over there because of all the weird haunting stuff. My dad said he never told me growing up because he knew it would scare me, but he knew the house was haunted. He said the house used to be in town, but when the widow who lived there finally died, the new owners decided to move it out to the country on the land by the pond. He said the day they moved in just happened to be the old lady's funeral. He said they purposefully drove the house by the graveyard as they were having the cemetery, and stopped and opened the front door to let her spirit back in. That's messed up. Anyway, the new owners didn't stay there long, and my dad bought the house shortly thereafter. And that explained a lot as to why so many strange things kept happening.
A few years back, I was working the second shift at Colonial Williamsburg. I had started around 1 p.m., but sometimes wouldn't finish until later on at night. Colonial Williamsburg is what they call a living history museum, and it's basically that they kept a part of the city super old, so it's like stepping back in a time machine without any of the paradoxical dangers, so to speak. I used to work there on the weekends when I was in high school, so that was pretty low down the chain, and it was my job to turn off the lights of the governor's mansion and a few other places at the end of the night. This one night, I had just clocked out and was walking to my car when my boss called me and said that I had missed a light. I was still kind of new at the time, and the idea of burning down the Colonial Quarter was just about the most awful thing I could think of, so I apologized a bunch and headed back to correct my mistake. Sure enough, a light way up in the attic was visibly on from outside. I facepalmed super hard, head up there to the attic via the little ladder thing, but once I get up there, there's no lit candles at all. I start applying any and all logic, thinking the light we saw must have been a reflection from somewhere, and besides, it's no big deal. I'm just happy I didn't actually leave a candle on to potentially burn down one of my favorite places in the entire world. So, I shrug it off, head back down the ladder, and re-begin the walk to my car. But yet again, as I'm walking, I feel my phone vibrating in my pocket, and once again, it's my boss asking if I'm actually going to do my job properly. I immediately text back that I did, and get an incoming call in response. He actually seems super angry, saying, like, "Why are you lying to me? Do you think I'm dumb?" And a small argument unfolded before I turned around and saw that, sure enough, there was a light back on in the window of the old attic. That's when I realized something wasn't quite right, and I calmly asked my boss to meet me outside so we could both make sure the candle was put out properly, together. I'd been a diligent worker for the few weeks I'd been there, but I could tell just from this that my boss thought I was crazy, dumb, or both. I mean, I'd be thinking the same thing. Who can't put out a simple candle? But as I wanted him to see, there was much more at play than that. So I meet him outside, and once we've established that A, no one is playing a prank, and that B, I obviously wouldn't just lie to him, we head over to the house with a lit candle in the loft. As we approach, each of us agrees that we can both see a lit candle up in the window. And by now, my boss has passed thinking I'm dumb and probably just curious to see what it was talking about. But lo and behold, when we head up into the attic, there's no lit candle. and I made sure to make sure that my boss goes up first so he couldn't accuse me of just snuffing it out like I'm gaslighting him or something. When I get up there, my boss has actually turned pale when he turns to me and says, "You smell that, right?" And sure enough, the distinct odor of a burnt candle could be smelled, and the wick of the candle was still warm and sooty. We're both right on the verge of freaking out entirely, and my boss turns to me like, "You swear you put that candle out the first time." But just as I'm about to promise him that I did, and that something seriously freaky is going on, we hear this noise from the old wardrobe that made both of us freeze in place. It was this wheezy, raspy sound, exactly like my little cousin made during a horrible asthma attack during her 7th birthday party. I was so scared that I could practically hear my own heartbeat in my ears. I wanted to bolt out, but for some reason I just couldn't bring myself to. My boss turns towards the wardrobe like, Is anyone there?" And then in response, we both just heard the sandpaper voice growl, "Get out." Me and my boss almost knocked each other over trying to get to the ladder, tearing through this old colonial house that we normally treated with kid gloves. Like, I think I'd have honestly smashed my way straight through a wall if I had the strength to. I was literally that terrified. Me and my boss ran to my car, him jumping into the passenger seats and me in the driver's, and we took out of there, not even caring where we were headed, just as long as it was away from Colonial Williamsburg. As I'm driving, I feel my phone start buzzing in my pocket again. I can't answer because I'm driving, but from the call ID, I can see it's from the overnight security guy. I realize that he'd probably just seen, either on camera or in person, me and the boss sprinting out of the house before speeding off in my car, and was wondering what the deal was. Only I realize we've also left him back there with whatever was in the wardrobe, so I'm panicking and telling the boss, "Call Terry. We have to warn Terry." So, he does. And right as my boss is telling Terry to get out of there, I just hear like, "Terry, are you kidding me? You literally just scared us half to death." And that's when it hit me. Terry had been hiding up in that attic, lighting the candle, and then putting it out again when he heard someone walk into the house. And I guess scaring the life out of us was his idea of fun, as bored as he must have been. And let me tell you, that was not funny, Terry. Not funny at all. A pretty short tale that will forever be burned into my skull. My mom had me super young at 16, and I guess after I was born, she became estranged from her paternal side of the family. I've heard various stories of how it all went down, and it's a story for another day. Today, I am in North Carolina with my mother, but I have started to get to know my maternal grandfather and my grandmother, who are wonderful people. A couple of years ago, a cousin, who's in his 50s or 60s maybe, found me on Facebook. I'm not sure if my mom told him about me because my grandfather isn't too fond of this particular cousin, so I'm not sure how I was found. So, gather round and whip out your banjos, because here's the Facebook message that started out friendly enough, but it eventually made me want to change my entire name and move to another country. This cousin responds, "Hey Katie, I'm John. I'm in SoCal and wanted to say hi to you. You're my family's second cousin. How are you? Are you still in the SoCal area?" "Hey, yeah, I'm still living in SoCal. Are you here visiting?" "Yeah, I'm actually in Irvine. I'd love to hug you." "Oh, nice. I live right on the city line. How long are you here for?" "Actually, leaving in the morning at 8:55. Are you working today?" "Yeah, I'm at work, and I have plans tonight with my roommate. Wish I remembered you were out here earlier in the week. My son and his family go to bed at around 9. I'd love to see you, girl. Where do you work?" "I work about 30 minutes away from Irvine." "Okay, beautiful. I know you're related to me, but dang, you're fine, girl. I love your picture with the angel shirt on." "I'm sorry, what? This is a really odd conversation. You can't be that old. You're only, what,
27? Your statement just made me physically ill. Oh, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Maybe I can see you next visit. I don't really feel comfortable doing that, and I don't feel comfortable with this interaction. You shouldn't act like that towards family. What? Well, maybe don't be an incestuous creep then, yeah? Have a nice flight home. And then I blocked him. So yeah, what a time to be alive. I used to work overnight security at a few different sites here in Chicago, and one of them was a large corporate office building. It was basically no different from any of the other overnight jobs I worked, but the thing that really sets it out is that I only worked there for 3 nights. 3 nights, and I noped out of there, settling for sucky unemployment before I could get another position. First night wasn't so bad, but the second started getting weird. Creaking noises coming from boiler rooms, static on the radio that none of the other guards seemed to hear. But the third night, I'm doing the rounds, checking doors, securing staircases, and I turn down this super long hallway, maybe 400 feet long, with offices and conference rooms lining both sides. Each has a window, some large and some small, and because they're dark, I can kind of see my reflection in them briefly as I walk past before they're cut off by solid wall. So it's like wall, wall, reflection, wall, wall, reflection, and so on and so forth. The last window I walk past, I swear to God I see someone walking behind me for a second. Like it was so real that I almost spun around in fright before I realized it was probably just a trick of the light or something. Anyway, I carry on the shift, pulling the same patrol about an hour later. I jokingly wonder if I'm going to see the ghost behind me again, and obviously I don't see anyone the second time, which confirms to me that it was just some illusion in my eyes. Then I actually get kind of curious, and start wondering how it made that kind of double reflection in the first place, which is just about the time I look behind me to the piece of glass in the fire door, where my faint reflection looked like it has two heads. It was so weirdly subtle that I barely even noticed it, like the kind of thing you don't really notice at first, but when you do, you can't unsee it. And again, I swear to God it looked like I had two freaking heads, one just sort of splitting off from the other at the neck. Again, I shake this off as a trick of the light, albeit a pretty big coincidence getting two of those in as many hours. But hey, stranger things can happen, right? The big nope moment came when I got back to the security office a couple of minutes later, and my duty partner asked me, "Who else was up there with you just then?" Now, we had quite the big team on the night shifts, as, like I said, it was a real big building, and I know for sure there wasn't no one else up there with me when I did my rounds. I told the guy he must have been pulling my leg, but he swore on his mama's life that he saw someone walking behind me in the corridor. It was only for a split second, but they swore they saw it. Only, like I said, we had a big team, so they didn't think anything of it. I quit at the end of that night. 3 shifts in, and that kind of nonsense was happening on like an hourly basis. I'd have to be going out of my mind to stay there a second longer. It isn't like Chi-Town is short on security jobs either. A good one is hard to find, I admit it. But the tide-you-over money comes as easy as work ever wants to. Far too easy for me to stay in a job like that. I've heard some people say they are just pulling a prank on me, hazing the new guy or whatever. But even then, working a security job where your buddies ain't got your back is kind of just asking for trouble, in my opinion.
This happened to me when I was around middle school age. I can't remember the year, but I was quite young and was staying the weekend at my grandmother's house with my dad, as it was his weekend to see me. My parents are divorced, so I would travel to South Carolina to see my dad every other weekend at that time. That day, she had decided to take us to see her sister, my great aunt, who lived alone on an old plantation that she rented out for large wedding venues. The land is a sprawling plain, with the main house at the top
a barn several dozen feet beside it, and an outside bathroom that looks more like a mini home with a porch. There are walking paths between these, and are relatively close. It was my first time coming to the property, and I was excited to explore. My aunt showed me around the large old house, explaining that there were guest rooms for the bride and rooms for her family and the groom's family to get ready for their wedding. She eventually mentioned that because the house was so old, there was a ghost living on the property. She had asked a medium to do a reading of her home once and revealed that there was a young man named Isaac who was a slave on the property hundreds of years before. He had been working late at night without a candle or lantern and had fallen into the well and died. While showing me the outside grounds, among showing me the barn and the bathroom, she showed me the crude flat stone marker on the edge of the woods of her property, where he was allegedly buried according to the medium. They had simply covered the well with dirt and placed the stone over it. There are no records proving this to be the case that my aunt could find, but the activity she had experienced in the home begs the difference. At this point, the adults were all inside the house talking and drinking coffee. I decided to wander and explore as I planned. I put the horses on the edge of the fence and ran into the yard and decided to take a bathroom break in the outside bathhouse. Both the men's and women's restrooms were spacious, containing a shower, a large sink, and a toilet. So I sat and was ready to get back up and go outside when all of a sudden, without warning, five loud bangs rang against the door. It scared me so bad. Before the last bang, I had already begun to shout, "I'm almost done, I'm getting out now." And in one quick motion, I stood up, pulled my pants up, and yanked open the bathroom door to find no one was there. I looked across the field at the men's restroom and didn't hear someone go in there. But it made sense if someone really needed to use the restroom that badly, they would have gone there instead. But I didn't hear a door slam, as I had ran to the door so quickly, with less than a 5-second interval, that if they had tried to make a break for it, I would have heard, as you would have had to stomp on the porch and slam the door closed behind them. I called out, but no one answered. I ran down off the porch and stared dumbfounded at the bathhouse. I circled the house, but there was no one around. At this, I was completely spooked, and ran back to the main house and told my great aunt and grandmother what happened. My aunt rubbed my back comfortingly, gave me some chocolates, and sat me on the dinner table. "It happens more than you think, dear. Isaac likes to pull pranks." While I ate my chocolate, she explained how home renovations have been halted, as the workers would have their tools thrown at their heads or paint cans toppled over. Doors slam, and men swear to never come back and finish working. Times where she was out of town, and the stereo system in the barn would turn on full blast in the middle of the night, leaving the neighbors to call the police just for them to show up on an empty property with no one in sight. He seems to hate when the house is renovated or changed. There was one time where a couple were staying in a guest room, and even though it was summer, they could not go to sleep as the room was frigid cold. My aunt would run up and down the stairs delivering blankets to the couple, and though she understood what was happening, she wouldn't dare tell them. Isaac must have been in that room with them. This experience has left me questioning my skepticism in the paranormal. I can't understand how this could have happened. I've even asked my dad earlier this year if he remembered visiting, or if he had tried to prank me by banging on the door, but he couldn't even remember what visit I was talking about. I've plundered every avenue of exploration for the sound, but nothing comes up, other than the sure fact that someone definitely knocked on my door that day. The home is used for family gatherings for my dad's side of the family, and honestly, I'm dreading going back again after that experience. I haven't been back since then, but I'm sure Isaac will remember me and pick on me again.
This happened a long time ago. I must have been in middle school. I don't remember exactly what grade, but around that age. I was actually a soccer player, and I was your typical middle school-aged boy at that point in my life. Honestly, I was normal in just about every way you can imagine.
I texted girls, played video games, and hung out with my friends. Pretty much my life for that time. Well, there was this one time that my mom brought me to the store. Every once in a while, she would drag me along because she needed the company. You know how parents can be. So we ended up at a strip mall with the most boring stores, as you can imagine. The kinds of places that only a mom would want to spend money. Obviously, I was bored out of my mind. My mom tried to make small talk as we looked through random wall decor, but she could tell that I was really bored. She got kind of frustrated. My mom can be moody like that. I eventually just asked her if I could go explore some of the other stores. She said yes, but that I couldn't spend any of her money. And she knew that I didn't have any of my own, so I was just off to kill some time. This strip mall had 6 or 7 stores, and none of them appealed to me, but I was determined to kill that time. I was already annoyed that I had to get dragged out on a Saturday. I thought to myself that the best thing I could do was walk around. I actually had one of those step counters way back then, which I thought was the coolest thing in the world, and my goal was to get that as high as I possibly could. There was a Target nearby, and it was bigger than the other stores, so I figured that there would be more space to walk around. And with that, I was off. I went into the Target and didn't even make an attempt to pretend to look at stuff. I just walked up and down the aisles like a maniac. Thinking back, it must have been a pretty funny sight. When you have someone in a store that is obviously just trying to get their step counter up, it becomes really obvious that they are not shopping. I must have been doing this for about 10 or 15 minutes when an older guy came next to me. He started walking beside me. He told me his name was Larry, and Larry said that he wanted to walk with me. Now, being a naive kid, I didn't think anything of it and said that I would love to have the company. And that was when I started complaining about my mom. Larry began asking a series of questions that should have really raised some serious alarm bells in my head. He asked where exactly she was, how long she would be gone, and things like that. I told him I would probably have to wait for her for another hour or two before she was done shopping. That was when he offered to take me back to his place. He said that he had an Xbox, and he only lived 2 minutes away. When he asked me that, I stopped walking. Part of me almost said yes, but then I remembered my parents telling me all about the creepy old men who try to kidnap kids. Stranger danger. The realization hit me like a ton of bricks, and I told him that I wanted to go back and see my mom. He started getting really persistent about taking me for ice cream and then back to his place. I told him I didn't want any ice cream and that my mom was looking for me. That was when he offered me $100 to go with him. I just told him no and started to run away. He followed me outside. He watched me run back into the store that I had last seen my mom. The creepiest look, too. This guy was truly a freak. I got inside the store and ran over to my mom. I started telling her about the creepy man, and she became really concerned. She asked me where he was, and then I told her that he was probably still in the parking lot of Target. We looked outside of the glass windows, and he was looking in. When he saw us look at him, he walked off briskly. My mom went outside to try to get a good look at him or get a license plate, but by that point, he was already gone. We ended up calling the police and filing a report with them. I couldn't tell them very much, though. I wasn't, and I'm still not, a very observant person. The only thing I could remember about him was that he had a collared shirt on and he had no hair, and that his name was supposedly Larry. But that was it. I asked my mom about the case years later. I guess she kept up with it to see if they ever got him. Of course, they didn't. And it really scares me that someone who was possibly willing to abduct a child is just out and about. It really freaks me out and kind of makes me not want to go out in public very much. But anyway, that was how I was almost abducted in Target when I was in middle school. I thank God every day that I didn't go with him, because I would probably be dead. I'm 24, female, and this happened at my old job. My mom decided that I needed a job, one that wouldn't cause much stress, interfere with school, and could keep me out of trouble on the weekends, so I elected to babysit for neighbors, cousins, and other families around my neighborhood. I was 17, I had a good time with friends, and it was the easiest way to make money. Seeing the kids' face light up when they would see me made the job that much more enjoyable. But the last group of kids I babysat were weird. I would watch them 4 days a week. I would help them with their homework and make sure that they were fed and asleep by 7 o'clock at night. Things were great for the first few months, but I began to feel like they were imagining things or something, which is when things got weirder. Marissa was the oldest, she was 8, Larry was the middle child, he was 6, and Alexis was the baby, she was 3. I can recall one particular night when I was swamped with homework. The kids were watching TV in the living room while I was sitting at the kitchen table. Math wasn't the easiest subject for me, so it took more time to concentrate on, being too focused on something else, while babysitting isn't a good thing. A while had passed until I realized that the house was strangely quiet. I looked up from the table to see the kids sitting on the kitchen floor, looking up at me with those sweet eyes. "What are you doing?" I asked. "Waiting to go home?" Marissa smiled. "You're already home, silly." "No, we live with you," she said. "I'm only the babysitter, sweetie. I watch over you when Mom and Dad need a night for themselves," I laughed. "But Jackson said that you were our mom. You gave us these new parents because you had to." "Who's Jackson?" I questioned. "The man in my closet," she responded. "How long has that man been in your closet?" "I don't know," she shrugged. "But he says that you're pretty and kind." "You have quite the imagination, Marissa," I chuckled. A sinking feeling of dread settled over me when I heard the floorboards overhead creaking because of something walking around. The heavy footsteps frightened Larry and Alexis. They tightly hugged my legs while Marissa looked at the ceiling. "Jackson's here," she clapped. I never jumped out of my chair faster than I had at that moment. I scooped the kids up in my arms and rushed them to the front porch. "I need you to go to Mr. Hughes's house and get help."
"But we want to stay here with you," she pouted.
"Just go," I pushed her. They didn't really understand why I was being so frantic, but Marissa nodded before grabbing her brother and sister's hand. I watched them run off the porch and across the yard before I stepped inside the house to face whatever it was inside the child's bedroom. I grabbed a knife from the kitchen sink, slowly crept up the stairs, and stood outside of Marissa's room. I gently pressed my ear against the door. Muffled noises met my line of hearing, which caused me to swing the door open. Marissa's window was open. The cool breeze drifting into the room caused alarm bells to go off. I know for a fact the window was closed prior to putting those kids in front of the TV. The dresser drawers were open, clothes strewn across the floor and toys scattered on the bed. It was at that moment, as I was reaching for the protruding light switch, that I asked myself why I didn't just call the police. I suppose it was just instinct to defend the children. I flicked the light on to see the man sitting in the closet, his back against the wall, his belt undone, and a toothless grin greeting me.
"You're even prettier in person,"
he wheezed. My chest felt like it was tightening. I struggled to take a breath, but the sound of sirens filled me with relief. The man jumped up from the floor, knocked me into the wall, and ran out the room. I sank to the floor and let the tears go. The kids made it to the neighbor's house and banged on the door until Mr. Hughes answered it. He was alarmed when he saw the bedroom light illuminate the backyard, so he called 911. Mrs. Hughes sat in the dining room with Marissa, Larry, and Alexis until the police arrived. The man hiding in the closet had apparently been living in there for a few weeks. He was in his 40s, strung out on something and homeless. I don't know what happened to him, but that ended my babysitting career permanently. My advice to anyone who might babysit in the future: please check the house before you get too comfortable. You never know what is going to happen. I used to work graveyard shift security at a group of residential/commercial buildings that had been converted from old factories. Old like 1800s old. And some of the buildings still had a few features from when they were industrial buildings, one of which was the old style of architecture. Some of the interiors had these massive, intricate stone carvings and murals in them, and they wouldn't look out of place as a location for a horror movie, meaning some of my walk-arounds could get pretty creepy later at night. The first building I worked at was commercial only and was almost always completely empty at night after a certain time. It had this old, dusty antique of a freight elevator at one end of the building that honestly seemed like it was around at the time of the Founding Fathers. It was squeaky, creaky, and made noises that you definitely didn't want to hear out of an elevator, but was otherwise safe and functional. Then at the other end was a loft that contained the roof hatch, a hatch which the maintenance guy would sometimes forget to secure, and on windy nights you could hear it banging around. When it was left open, you could also hear the elevator machinery from the floor below when the elevator was in use. Also, this building is two floors and laid out as more or less a straight line from end to end, so no one can come or go on the floor that I'm on without me noticing. Anyway, so this was one of the first shifts I had after getting the job there. I was doing a foot patrol of the building and was at the loft end of that building, and I could hear the roof hatch door banging and the buzz of the freight elevator machinery starting up. Obviously, I'm the only person in the building, so after almost having a heart attack along with a metaphorical change of underwear, I went to check the far end of the building to see what was up. There's no one there, but the elevator has moved between floors. No one came out of any of the commercial spaces on the second floor to call the elevator up there. And I know that for a fact because I would have heard them opening and closing their door and moving in the hallway. Also, there's nowhere to go because it's a straight line, except for the fact that this is around the corner, so like I said, if there was anyone else in the building with me, I'm almost certain I would have seen them. It can't be someone on the first floor messing with me because there's a call button on each floor, but no way to control the elevator from outside other than that. In order to control the elevator, you have to be inside. There's no way about it. So I would have either seen them in the hall or found them standing in the elevator. Also, this particular elevator is one of those really old manual concertina-style ones, where you have to open and close the doors by hand. And if you know the kind I'm talking about, you'll also know how that's absolutely impossible to do quietly. Also, the elevator doesn't move at all until the doors are closed manually, and the last time I had seen the elevator, it had been on the first floor with the doors open. So unless I had legit ninjas in the building with me, something seriously weird was going on that night.
About a year ago, I moved into an apartment complex that was fairly new, so it can't be haunted because it's not old, right? First few weeks I stayed there, I didn't have any issues. But about a month after I started living there, I began waking up in the middle of the night, around 1 or 2 a.m. to a man standing in my hallway. He wore a white t-shirt and jeans and looked like he was probably in his 30s. When I saw him standing in the hallway, I would bolt out of bed yelling, "What the hell are you doing here?" But by the time I reached it, he would be gone. And because I was a bit stressed at the time, I didn't think anything of it. Having grown up in a haunted house, for real, I was accustomed to strange things happening, but I had never seen a full-bodied apparition with a face and clothes in such detail, so I figured it wasn't an apparition. I figured I must have been dreaming, and was probably one of those stress-induced dreams where I didn't recognize that I was dreaming. This happened 3 or 4 times over a 2-week period. In general, though, even when I didn't see a man standing in the hallway, I would still wake up at around the same time every night. At the end of this 2-week period, I was pretty tired. Then after the 2-week period, it stopped. I stopped walking in the middle of the night and didn't see any random dudes in the hallway. I went to a friend's house for Sunday dinner at this point, tired. But other than that, all was normal. I'm really close to my friend's family, and her parents are basically my parents, and I go to her parents for advice when I need it. Normally I'm the one to pull them aside when I'm struggling, but this time her dad pulled me aside and asked if I was all right. I said I was fine, but stressed, and other than that, life was good. He had a pretty intense look of concern on his face, so I was a little taken aback by the intensity of the "Are you okay?" question, so I asked why. This part is a bit religious, Sorry for the non-religious ones out there, only a small part of the story, though. My friend's dad is a pretty spiritual-slash-religious person, and when I asked why, he said that the other night he'd had the strongest feeling he needed to pray for me, and pray that my home be cleansed, that the evil presence in my home would leave. So about the time he prayed, that evil presence left my home. I started sleeping through the night, which brings me to the next part of the story. In the apartment above me, there lived a crazy person. Well, maybe she wasn't crazy, but it kind of seemed like she was. An older woman in her 60s. I would hear her pacing the floor and talking all night long. Not every night, but a lot. At first, I thought she was watching TV, but then I realized it was a single voice, never background music. And when she would talk in the bathroom, I could hear her conversations. What a love there was an apartment living, am I right? I should mention she lived alone. And when she would have these conversations, there was never any other voice, just her. So I assumed she spoke to herself all night long. Fast forward 6 months, when the lady upstairs moved out, her family actually came and moved her out suddenly. Finally, I would be able to sleep without hearing her talk to herself all night. By this time I had a roommate, and my roommate had a dog. A few days after the lady upstairs moved out, the dog stopped going into my roommate's room and would freak out in the hallway if you left her there at night. I now sleep with my door closed, because I had a roommate and her dog, so I didn't witness the freakouts at first. Normally during the day, the dog would sit in the window of my roommate's room and watch the people go by basically all day long. Now suddenly she wouldn't go into my roommate's room, and when she was in the hallway she would cry and scratch on my door to be let in. At night she would normally sleep in my roommate's room, but suddenly she wouldn't, and if you forced her you would literally have to drag her in, and then she would scratch and cry to leave. I started to feel like I was being watched when I showered, or would feel like someone else was in the room when no one was. That's when I noticed the man in the hallway was back. I never told my roommate about my previous experiences with the man in the hallway, until she brought up that she started feeling weird at night, and would wake up night after night. If you don't want roommates to pick up and leave, you don't tell them ghost stories have happened in your house. So that's when I told her about the man in the hallway, and when we called my friend's dad. My friend's dad came over, blessed the house, and we didn't have any issues after that. The dog went back to hanging out by the window all day. A few days after the guy in the hallway stopped showing up, my roommate started sleeping through the night again. My theory is the man in the hallway left my place and went upstairs, and that's who the lady upstairs was speaking to all night long, and why her family freaked out and moved her suddenly. Once she left, he came back down to mine, till he got booted. The question is, where did he go?
This is hands down the scariest experience of my life. I was out driving with two of my best friends. It was one of those wonderful summer nights where we just wanted to have some fun. We had just gotten out of the movie theater and wanted to enjoy a drive around our area. We live in a very rural area, and sometimes it's nice to just drive around and see what's here. Well, it's pretty dark and everything, but we were having a good time anyway. It had to have been about 9 o'clock at night. We were blasting music and laughing and everything, but there was a car that started following us. They weren't tailgating us or anything. They just followed us for a really long time. One of my best friends pointed out to me, and I hadn't even noticed it. I asked her how long it was behind us, and she said at least for 10 minutes. I wasn't exactly sure what to do. We were pretty far out in the middle of nowhere. I remember learning about this little trick a couple of years ago. If you think someone is following you, you can take 4 turns in the same direction, and if they're still behind you, they're definitely following you. There weren't very many turns out there, but every single turn I took, there was this car. By the time I made my 3rd turn, I started getting really uneasy. I thought that we may have been in real danger, and the mood died from there. We turned the music off, and instead of laughing, we were sitting there in dead silence. We all started freaking out a little bit more when I made that 4th turn. He was still behind us. Like I said, he wasn't tailgating us or anything. It wasn't even very close, but he was close enough to keep an eye on us. I tried getting my friends to call the police, but we were out of range of any cell phone service. I was completely at a loss for what to do there.
I was scared out of my mind. My friend came up with the best idea. We could just go to the nearest store or whatever, and hopefully the people there would help us if the person kept following us. Well, none of us knew where any stores were nearby. The closest one we could think of was a Target near town, but that had to have been at least 30 minutes away. We couldn't think of anything else to do, though, so that was the plan. Drive to Target. There was no way on earth I could ever describe to you the situation. It was the most horrifying thing of my life. Not only because I thought I was going to die, but because I had no idea what to do and it went on for so long. 30 minutes is a lifetime when you think that a potential murderer is right behind you. I sincerely hope you never have to experience it. You get more tense and anxious with every passing moment. It may have felt that it had taken a lifetime, but eventually we got there. Target was pretty crowded too, which we were thankful for. And this was our plan. I was going to park my car right in front of Target, and we were all going to run out and run into the store. We just hoped that someone would help us by that point. Or better yet, this guy would leave and not want to make a big scene. I don't know why we didn't think to call the police. By the way, we definitely would have had service, but the whole situation was a way of stopping you from thinking clearly. I parked my car right in front of the Target, and we all ran in just like we were planning to do. We asked for our manager when we came across the first employee we saw. We told him that we were being chased. When the manager got there, he believed us and brought us to the employee section of the store. He called the police for us and helped us out. Thankfully, the guy from the car didn't come in. At least, we didn't think he did. We don't really know what he would have looked like, and by that point, none of us were watching the car when we pulled into the parking lot. When the cops got there, it was really late. It took them almost 20 entire minutes to get there, which I thought was a little slow. And then when they did show up, they treated us like we were crazy. One of the cops thought that we were just making the whole situation up for attention. And that really made my friend angry, and I had to stop her from getting up in his face. The manager was really understanding. He let us have drinks from the vending machine and asked if we wanted a ride home. I thanked him and told him that I was going to drive my friends back home. I don't know who was in the car, and I don't know why they were following us. I just know that I never want to be in a situation like that ever again, and I hope you never have to understand how terrifying it can be.
All right, y'all, that is my time. I want to say thank y'all for tuning in. For those of you who called in, whether you stayed or not, y'all support is greatly appreciated. Also, I want to thank those who inboxed me and DM me on Instagram and Facebook. Y'all are the real MVPs. But before I get out of here, I just want to tell y'all to meet me at the same time, same place right here on Raven Real Steel Radio. But before I get out of here, I'm going to leave y'all with my thought of the day because it is morning time. Wherever y'all at, where I'm at is morning time. But anyway, my thought of the day is this. Sometimes it's necessary to take 10 steps back to take 20 steps forward because by doing that, you can see the distance and make sure that you are not stepping into any potholes that is in your path because only when you are set back forth enough, only can you see clearly. So make sure that whatever you do in life, that you do not be afraid to start anew. With that being said, love, peace, and blessings. Pray before you lay. I love y'all, and good night.